Hey, let's start the show.
It's June 7th, 2012. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, after a late flight in last night and an early wake up this morning, Norman Chan. How are you doing, sir?
Extra punchy. I think we're all extra punchy today.
How, like, are you, is this punchy, like, the day after CES punchy?
No, we had a good warm-up.
Yeah, we've been talking really for a while. We blew a lot of good material, I think, actually. Gary, what, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, actually. I was just admiring your new Slave One over there. It fits in very well with the other models.
Yeah,
Dangerously close to the edge, though.
I live on the edge, Jen.
You know what they say? If you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space.
Oh, I was going to say, if you're not living on the edge, you're dying.
Doesn't make as much sense, I guess. But that was, we did a little building. I haven't built Lego in a while, but we built some over the weekend, and you built a Slave One, and it came out great. It's a great model.
I stand by, I mean, for people watching the video, you can kind of see in the back, Will has
not at all.
The Tanta 4 and the Slave One.
And the MIDI Star Destroyer.
And also the Guggenheim, I guess that's what it is.
That's the Solomon Guggenheim Museum, yeah.
I think that this little mantle here on the back, you can only put one piece of Lego.
I agree.
It needs to be this, the Tanta 4.
The Blockade Runner is a fantastic model.
It looks great. I think you're cluttering it up that space.
No, I think it looked good. Yeah, I mean, this stuff's good. That's the problem with Lego, is that once you build it, it's got to go someplace.
You should be self-conscious.
I'm taking all my Lego to the office when we get
You
get
should.
In. I'm putting it on the shelf up above the
That's
desk,
a good idea.
Keep the Blockade Runner.
I'm going to take them all in.
Nah, keep the Blockade
Runner. No, you want to have one good collection all in one place.
Yeah, you want to have – it's on loan to the Berman Braun offices.
That's what you should do. You should have a little on loan from the private collection of Will Smith.
Exactly.
And we'll all have contributions.
Yeah. So let's see. This has been a big week. E3, Tuesday, Wednesday. We went down and met the new corporate overlords on Tuesday. That was a lot of fun. Let's see what else. Well, I mean, we met some of them before, but we went to the office. We went to the home office, which we'd never done before. We were in LA. We had some amazing sushi. We want to talk about the sushi?
No.
I don't want to tell anybody where that place was.
I don't want to tell anyone.
Yeah, no, it's a bad idea.
It's very LA.
We probably shouldn't have tweeted it then.
No, I pathed it.
Oh, did you? Oh, yeah, because no one's on Path.
No, just you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Just friends.
It's you and my three interesting friends.
That's what Path is good for, is if you want to kind of share something just with a handful of people and not the big group.
So even though E3 is this week, and it's a whole week, our friends at Giant Bomb, still there right now. Kind of surreal coming home last night and watching the Bombcast live in a place that we were just at 24 hours.
And still previously. Going strong.
I just want to say, so I listened to the Day Zero on the way in with Pachter and Jeff Green, the gamer dad. Jeff Green and Brad Muir, who we bumped into on the floor yesterday, and it was a little bit weird listening to that, knowing what an incredible shithole that place is.
Oh, is it the same house they had before?
No, it's worse.
It's worse than the old Bombcast house, because that place was terrible.
Dramatically,
so downtown LA.
Paint a word picture, Norm.
I guess I'm not going to give away the location. Somewhere in the heart of downtown LA.
It's between furniture stores.
I mean,
the one that
I went to, it was in South Central. It was like a goddamn crack house.
But it was a house. This is a store. This is
an abandoned storefront.
Where did they find these places?
Storefront that goes deep, two stories. There's
like a loft. Like it's the kind of place that you go in and there's a stairway made of skateboards, and then the other stairway up to the lofts, the dude who made the stairs was bad at carpentry, so the stairs are different heights.
Yeah.
Like one step will be real short and one step will be real long, and there's also what's the name of the board that goes behind the vertical one on a stairway?
I don't know.
Word for that. But those were none of those.
So where do they find these awful places?
I think Ryan just goes to Cracklist.
Cracklist.
It really,
it's Craigslist for crackheads.
It totally looked like a crack house.
Yeah.
On a second floor, just like mattresses on the floor.
It was a nice mattress.
And a desk with one light. Yeah.
It looked like
a scene from
Seven.
Glass.
It looked like David Fincher might have shot something there.
Why not just get a nice hotel suite?
You mean classy? Like
the way you guys roll.
Oh.
I mean, you'd think with CSI money, those guys could fucking blow it out.
Hawaii 5-0, NCIS. Yeah. I mean,
it's America's number one network.
It is for old people.
Yeah. Well, they're old.
It's true.
Yeah. So
Jeff Green and
so
Michael Pachter.
Even though we were there and only were at E3 for one day, we were still just as tired as them because we had a whole different experience. We had the Entourage experience.
We kind of did.
How so?
We went to our new the offices of the company we work for now, Berman Braun,
mm-hmm.
and it's in Santa Monica. Totally, it was like going into Miller Gold Agency.
Wow.
I don't know if it was. I mean, there was a very.
I never had the LA experience before, yeah. where you walk in and there was a production company here.
Oh yeah,
and
pretty much all posters. They are law offices and production companies. Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. So yeah, and we like went out for the lunch and did Santa Monica kind of stuff and. Yeah.
LA's a good town. Yeah, it's not a great city, but it's a good city. There's good stuff there.
It's growing.
Not a cloud in sight.
It's yeah, growing.
I mean, obviously,
me.
Weather is one of the benefits for sure.
Yeah, it's not someplace I'd want to be like a single 23-year-old dude with no money and hard on my luck. But as I get older, and
you
I'm
mean like half the population of LA?
Yeah, pretty much everybody there.
Yeah, with a screenplay in hand and another screenplay in other hand.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to be reading screenplays while you're working at Denny's. But no, it was fun. It's growing on me as I get older, which is interesting. So yeah, E3. Well, we'll talk about E3 in a bit. Let's see. We were talking about these brownies, which I'm going to eat some now. A minute ago,
not just brownies, cookie brownies.
Yeah. Never heard of them before.
This is like the pizza
cookies baked into brownies.
It's the Pizza Hutification of baked goods. It's like the hot dog pizza.
Yeah, it's like when you go to the market now and you see like DiGiorno sells like pizza and wings in the box together.
WYNGS
or like PB&J. It's kind of like that PB&J that's all swirled into one jar. And some of this stuff seems kind of wrong, but I don't know. I like this. A cookie brownie.
These are delicious.
You get over whatever ethical objection you have to it very, very quickly. Basically, the second it goes into your mouth.
Yeah, once you get a bite of brownie and cookie together, you realize that these are two great tastes that taste great together.
It's great stuff. And it's just a Sara Lee, you know.
You know, Sara Lee, you told me something that doesn't surprise me at all now that I hear, but they're changing their name.
Apparently, but Sara Lee is changing its name. It's just something I saw on the news ticker when I was watching the news the other day.
Was there ever a real Sara Lee?
Well, that's the thing. I think it's a good brand name because even though obviously something like Sara Lee is a massive company and probably just part of an even more massive company.
Well, they probably don't
like
think
Sara Lee, Betty Crocker. You know, those kind of names make you feel like all this food is actually coming to you from like a little white-haired old lady in her kitchen.
There's a difference though, because Sara Lee, it makes me think of like freezer pound cakes. Whereas Betty Crocker,
for sure.
Betty Crocker, yeah, Betty Crocker is like the mixes that you add your own eggs and oil to and then chuck in the oven.
Cardboard boxes.
Like,
But this is the same Sara Lee. This came from a Sara Lee. Oil and the eggs.
But I think they've transitioned into that away from the freezer cakes and freezer pies. Because Sara Lee used to be like you go get a cherry pie and it's already made and you just put it in the oven for 20 minutes and it heats up and then boom you have a pie.
No, the Hostess has that market now.
I don't think Hostess does that stuff at all. Do they really?
Well, they do the pie in a packet.
Wait, what? Well, that's old.
Wait, are you saying which do you find more objectionable, the mix that you make or the ready-made just put it in the oven? What are you saying is worse?
What is hipster Will?
Yeah. Like when you bake
store food, yeah.
if you bake cookies, goods. Will you ever bake from a mix or will you always insist on baking from scratch?
I have been known to bake from a mix on occasion.
If you don't have powder if you don't have flour in your face at the end of it.
Well, but
it's not worth eating.
Well, here's the thing. Cakes are hard. Like making cake is a hard. Cake is a high skill thing.
Very
like
difficult.
Bundt cake is, I think, fairly significantly easier than like a layer cake. It's very hard to make a layer cake.
Anytime you're doing layers,
right.
It's very difficult.
That's why those shows are so successful.
Oh yeah.
Cake well, but that's a whole different thing.
You know,
I mean that's like a Jedi level of cake making. But even just making a basic cake that comes out basically straight and all the levels are parallel, like that's not easy to do.
Well, the way you do that is by cutting the top off, and I've done that before. It's not like the end of the world.
It's a lot of waste.
It's all afternoon. Well,
yeah, but you eat that.
Yeah, that's all what? Straight down the gullet.
Once when you're baking, this is one of the great things about baking a layer cake. When you bake a very simple layer cake, you bake two separate cakes mm-hmm. and you put jam and you know cream or whatever on the top of one, and then put one on top of the other. But you have to cut the top off for it to be straight.
If it's dough,
when you cut the lid off the bottom layer, the first thing you do is fucking eat that shit, right?
It's like you get rid of the muffin top.
It is. It's a muffin top muffins. And you
it's
eat it.
Top.
Sometimes what I do, depending on the type of cake.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. I did the double stack Filet-O-Fish this week.
Oh, gross.
Wait, homemade?
Well, I buried the lid.
Self-made? Or
no, I went to McDonald's where my local McDonald's has two Filet-O-Fish for a dollar.
A dollar?
Sorry, for $4. Oh. Two for four. So that would be crazy.
What?
If they're two for a dollar, I wouldn't be here now. I'd be at McDonald's. Two for $4. Gross. So I ordered the two for $4. Mm-hmm. disassembled one.
Oh, so, okay.
Took the extra patty, put it in the first one, and made a double stack.
You made it yourself. Very MacGyver.
And it was great.
You know, you could make a Big Mac out of that if you took the bottom bun of the second flavor.
Well, no, they also do two Big Macs for $4, and I did consider a Quad Mac. But I thought that might be
shaking my head.
That is a quad core match.
This is such a bad idea.
Quad core.
I made a quad core.
So yeah, I like to take the leftover scraps of the and dump it in a glass of milk.
Oh.
And you get like a cake. Well, it's cake in a cup, basically. It's like a cake.
Then what do? You eat like mushy cake with a spoon or something?
Cake.
Cup with milk is the worst thing because you got to scoop out with your finger.
No, just a little bit of milk. Just like a two fingers of milk.
Just to kind of soften it up?
Yeah, you just want to have a little, make it a slurry.
You know, I've never been one to dunk. In England, it's very popular with tea.
Yeah.
When you have tea and biscuits, you take your Bourbon biscuit or your rich tea, whatever you have, and you dunk it in the tea to soften it up a little bit. And I've never liked that.
Well, I do that with Oreos sometimes, but that's pretty much my only
Dunking Oreos in milk is the exception.
Yeah, they
but you don't want it to get soggy.
You got to time it exactly right. There's like a 3-second window.
Yeah.
It's the optimal dunking.
You can't dunk and then like get distracted. You got to dunk and then straight in.
I used to have an uncle who made what he called an Oreo casserole, which was a thin layer of milk on the bottom. You layered a whole shitload of Oreos and then put some ice cream on top of that and then more Oreos.
He's
he has
mad
diabetes
genius.
Now, actually. Yeah. Kind of sad story, I guess, when I think about it.
Wow.
Well, thank you, Leah, for the brownie cookie.
Brownies.
And if you don't like hearing us chewing on the podcast, send your Twitter messages to @Leah. And remember
the only thing that
you
could do to make these better, and this is true of basically anything, is to smear some Nutella on top.
Unless you're allergic to nuts.
I would just take
the shot, right?
Yeah, I would just choose or just choose that to be the matter of my death.
Bust out the EpiPen. Let's talk about tech news.
Quite a few things happened in tech this week. Yesterday, while we were gone, Google had their big press conference to announce the future of Google Maps. And this announcement
is this an iOS announcement?
No, it's not an iOS announcement.
Oh, what an amazing coincidence!
This press conference was announced last week, and a lot of people were speculating that it was in anticipation of WWDC and Apple announcing that they are going to have their own Maps program in
the
iOS.
The map war is changing. It's going to change significantly in the next couple of weeks.
The Maps war has.
So, you know, just the basic history of it, obviously Apple has for the longest time used Google's Maps technology and their service on the iPhone.
Eric Schmidt went on stage with the announcement of the iPhone and talked about shared services and Google Maps.
This was pre-Android and as Jobs put in his biography, those Google bastards fucking us over.
Yes. And Google Maps in iOS works fine right now. It's not Nav. GPS and directions.
Well, they do have it. They just don't have the turn-by-turn GPS.
The best $50 I've spent on phone-related stuff is the turn-by-turn Nav. Yeah.
But you know what?
Even though I hate my Garmin GPS in my car, one of the reasons why I'm holding off getting a new one is that I'm just waiting for the iOS 6 turn-by-turn. I think that will
And turn-by-turn doesn't mean you need like a fancy, you know, third-person skewed 3D perspective. It just means it needs to track you and orient the map.
And tell you, hey, you have a turn coming up in 200 meters.
Yes. It just needs to be smart about the direction so you don't need a co-pilot reading
now,
off a list.
And again, just so people understand the difference, you can kind of do that in the current Google Maps. You just have to manually thumb through the steps.
Well, you end up doing
it.
It will
track your location in real time, but it won't say – it won't detect that you're coming up on a turn and say in 200 meters turn
left.
You got
to click the next button.
Right.
I find that trying to use the default map on iOS instead of turn-by-turn, especially if I'm by myself in the car, is more stressful and much more dangerous than just knowing how to go where I'm going.
If you're in an unfamiliar city, yes.
Yeah.
If you're in a city you know well, then you look at the map and do a memory.
Yeah, well, yeah. And you say, I need to go.
This, of course, has been a big advantage that the Android phones have had over iPhone for a long time. And in fact, you see it now in some of the recent Droid commercials. They'll show the turn-by-turn feature where someone has docked the...
Oh, yeah.
They've cradled their Android phone into their car, turn left in 200 meters. Like, there's a very obvious advantage that Apple doesn't have there. That's going to change because I'm pretty certain that the new Maps service
you
that Apple's
hope.
Releasing will include that.
We would hope also.
I mean, we'll find out. We'll get to WWDC. And Apple did buy a maps company and mapping technology. So this is all but
assured. There's a philosophical discussion I'm not going to get into about whether advertising, hey, we have one feature that the other guy has is actually a good idea on a device that if it isn't holistically good is shit.
That's right. Marketing. I mean, that's marketing.
I know, but I'm just, anyway.
So a lot of people have speculated that this is a big stick in the eye for Google, because the iPhone, of course, probably the single most popular device.
It's definitely
out
the single
there.
Most
popular. It's probably the number one way in which Google Maps are used,
yes.
And that's now going to go away.
But okay, here's the thing. It's not like Apple is completely distancing itself from Google in terms of services. YouTube will still be a part of iOS. Right. Apple has no YouTube alternative. They're not going to partner with Vimeo and have a
right.
Vimeo
And Google
app.
Is still the default search, right?
And also, Google Maps on iOS, it's not ad-driven. Google's making no money.
Yeah, I wonder what the benefit is,
right?
They don't make any money at all.
Is it a brand recognition thing? Is it because when you launch – I mean, it's not called Google Maps. When you launch it, there is no – I think it does say maps provided by Google when you go into Street View. But
it does it when you're on the big screen too.
It's just, it's just all part of the you're right that it's hard to see how they monetize maps right now, but I think in terms of the long game of just getting everyone to live inside the Google footprint,
sure.
Like that is going to go against that.
So Google held its press conference and they announced three things, and I think two of the three things are unexciting and only
one
of them.
What were those two boring things?
I'll start with the boring things. One, Street View will now go off-road onto nature trails.
That's interesting.
Oh, so they have the street view trucks driving around in forests?
I think they have dudes with backpacks, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
On Street View, and they do have – it's literally dudes with backpacks like on ski trails and stuff like that.
Oh, that's crazy. The
expansion of Street View has been – I don't think it warrants a press conference. They've announced it silently in
It is
in
an amazing
posts.
Data project.
Oh,
Street View
is one of the best things Google has done for its map service.
Yeah.
Love Street View.
Worst things for privacy, best things for us.
And they going into buildings, doing storefront, stuff like that, that's totally cool.
Yeah, I mean, I want to know how to get to the...
Microsoft is also doing a decent job with its Street View competitor for Bing. I mean, it's ubiquitous, the idea of Street View. It's
so useful.
It is. And it's a project years ago...
I use it all the time. I'll often look up something on a map, like in the city, and I'm not entirely sure where that is. I go to Street View, and I'm like, oh, I recognize that.
I know where
that is now. Yeah,
I've used a Street View to find out about parking. Because then I use Street View and I look at the street signs. Oh, okay, I can see that there's a lot of parking meters here, so I'm going to expect to park in a parking lot. Or because the municipal website sucks.
Actually, that would be a nice idea, just an additional layer on Google Maps.
Yeah,
you could toggle a parking layer. Yeah.
Now you're thinking.
The question for me about the nature trail stuff, especially, is this like another step toward the wallification of people?
No,
I hope so. The virtual street map of the nature trail, why do you need to go on the nature trail anymore?
Nope.
Well, because
he's going to the Grand Canyon and looking at a picture of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, it's not like I don't need to go there now.
Well, I mean, one way I don't have to leave the house. Gary should
be
on board.
I appreciate that.
For people that do actually want to go hiking, looking at a picture of a hiking trail is not going to do it for them. They're going to want to actually go. For people like me who are not going to go anyway, what difference does it make?
Then it's enriching your life.
So the other thing that's, I guess, a little more interesting is the 3D aspect of Google Maps. And this is something that's also widely expected to be in Apple's Maps announcement, some type of 3D navigation.
Bing has had this for a long time.
Yeah.
Now, what does that mean exactly, 3D navigation?
So 3D popovers, they're using satellite photos and...
Oh, is this where you get kind of like the SimCity kind of look?
Yeah.
All right.
It's like Google Earth, but now Google Earth more in Google Maps.
It's a feature that is not new. Google has been building this. Like, there's plugins for SketchUp that basically they give you. I can't remember if it's an app for Google Earth or for SketchUp, but basically you open up one of these apps or the other. You get a kind of two-thirds overhead shot of a building, and you just rotate it around it two or three ways, and you draw the lines on the edge of the building, and that makes a 3D model of that.
Wow, these are so good.
The cookies are great.
They're delicious.
The brownies are amazing.
Thanks, Leah.
For anyone who wants to try this at home, Sara Lee Supreme Bars cookie brownie bars. Oh,
so it's not like they know the height of the Transamerica building.
Should I step away from the mic?
Don't chew into the microphone, dude.
It's not like Google has the actual data of how high each building is and dimensions. They contract out a small fleet of airplanes with cameras and use algorithms to calculate from multiple angles using photos.
Oh, so they're not using the SketchUp, the people doing SketchUp anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
so
you know who's going to love this is the cable news networks. You see how much they rely on Google Maps and Google Earth when they need to there's been a shooting somewhere. Quick, pull it up on Google Earth because it's the only image we have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
what's the exciting part?
Offline Google Maps.
Offline Google Maps.
Offline Google Maps.
Okay. On desktop or on mobile?
Mobile and desktop.
Well, mobile
starting
already
on
has
mobile.
That, doesn't it? On Android, you can already do offline Google Maps.
Nope.
Yeah, because you can do nav offline. you can cache areas of the map.
Why is this exciting though? Because aren't we pretty much always connected anyway these days?
No, have you ever driven to Oregon?
Or Petaluma?
I've driven through Oregon.
Yeah, if you're fucked if you want data and you're on two of the three nationwide networks.
Two top tips for Oregon. Number one, if you're Californian, don't tell anybody that.
They're always really nice to us. We had a nice time in Portland.
They don't.
They just told us not to bring any of our people.
They don't take kindly to outsiders, apparently. and also, don't try to pump your own gas because it's frowned upon.
Yeah, it's not frowned upon. It's against the law.
Yeah, they'll run out and stop you doing it.
The guy, I got out and pumped my own gas, and the guy was like, "No, no, no!
What are you doing? It's my job."
Yeah,
quit taking our jobs.
So offline Google Maps, you can store offline maps based on location. So you want to say, "I want a map of San Francisco." This route.
I don't understand how this is new. This is something that Android has done for ages. Is this on the PCs?
It's not on PCs yet. It'll be on Android soon. They're rolling it out on Android.
I do not understand how this is new.
This is new. Well, no Wi-Fi or cellular signal. Google Maps.
This is not super exciting, is it? And it does kind of feel like that they probably wouldn't have made a big deal out of this if it weren't for they wanted to get in front of this Apple
All
thing.
Three of these announcements could have been separate blog posts, and in the past would have just have been blog posts on the Google Latitude blog, Google Maps blog.
Right.
And the fact that they held a press conference to group these three announcements together shows that they want to get ahead of that iOS announcement at WWDC.
I wonder if there will be a desktop version of Apple's new map service as well, if they'll try to go up against Google Maps on computers.
I don't think so.
Or just on
phones. They want people on iOS.
Yeah. We'll get onto the WWDC stuff, but I am excited to see what Apple's map implementation. I'm sure it's very shiny and polished, you know, whether or not it's as... Now, what are they doing about Street View?
I don't know.
Because we've seen Apple trucks going around.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you.
They have to have their own version of that if they're going to compete with Google Maps.
But hold on. The Apple Map thing, the way they've been designing apps lately, could be a complete shit show. It could be that you have to unscroll the scroll of the map because it's so fucking skeuomorphic you can't stand yourself. Who knows what? It could look like a pop-up book of 3D maps. I mean, they could completely fuck this up.
When's the last time Apple completely fucked something up?
Well, look at the new calendar app on iOS.
Siri.
Siri's the last time.
Ping.
Yeah. Which is actually quite recent. And Ping.
I would argue Ping's like 3 years old. I would argue that any of the apps that they've made that mimic paper instead of using digital interfaces are giant fuck ups and are the kind of thing that we're all gonna be laughing at in 20 years.
So we're gonna be excited to see what they I don't think Apple
skeuomorphic compass.
Yeah, you have to untie the string that holds the map scroll shut, and then you have to spread it apart with two fingers to see.
I don't think they'd be ditching Google Maps if they weren't confident that what they had to replace it was as good or better. But we'll see.
So.
You're right. They're not immune to fucking up. Siri is kind of a shit show.
The people like paper.
Ping was a total misfire.
But you know what? People, iOS users aren't going to care because if it has nav, real nav.
If it has turn-by-turn nav.
It saves $50. They're going to see that first and they'll be happy with that. And over time, we might get pissed off that the traffic wasn't as good as Google Maps.
And it's suddenly going to, you know who's going to be really excited about this is third-party cradle manufacturers. I think the number of people who are going to want to cradle their phone in their car is going to go way up.
That thing that we used at CES, the sticky thing on the windshield, is real good.
I gotta look for something like that because I have my phone connected in the car anyway for music.
Yeah.
And you know, this is going to be the next part of that. It's going to be a better GPS than.
There's no reason why Google can't release their own Google Maps app.
Well,
for free.
Duplication of functionality.
No. They can still do it.
Yeah, and there's no reason why Apple could not block that in the store.
The next question I have is whether they're gonna if they do traffic routing around traffic, which is I think $2 or $3 a month option on Drive Motion X or Motion X.
Yeah, usually GPS, live traffic is an additional feature.
It's like a monthly charge. Yeah. If that's a free thing. That is a lot of
GPSs do come with lifetime traffic though.
Plus, if that's built
in, you pay an extra $100 for that.
If it's smart, because there's so many iOS users, and it's you opt in to send your data, and you can do the real time how long it takes to get from point A to point B because of how many people are driving on that freeway, that can potentially be very
given that. How are we going to pay for this? Is probably a question that is not asked very frequently around Apple. I would like to think that they would just do it and say, look, this is all the stuff thrown in.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, I mean, honestly, on something like that, I'd even be okay with, hey, it's $1 a month
if you don't let us upload the data.
Or free if you do let us upload your data.
No.
I don't think you'll be seeing that option.
Yeah.
Anyway, Do we want to talk about Justin Timberlake's new video streaming service?
The two Sean's.
Is this the airtime thing?
Yeah. That was Timberlake.
Two Sean's.
No, it's Sean Parker and Sean Fanning, right?
And Parker.
The Napster duo.
So this is basically chat roulette for iOS, right?
Is that chat roulette, period. It's chat roulette.
Anything, right?
Grown up.
Why is that? Why? Because I saw it, there was a very big glitzy press launch with Jimmy Fallon and
Sean Parker.
Yeah, so he's calling in all these celebrity favors. But like, what is this really something that's going to make a dent? Who gives a shit? Chat roulette.
I used chat roulette for 3 days until the ratio of dicks to human beings got out of control.
Yeah, if I wanted to look at pictures of people's dicks on my phone, there are many ways I can do that already.
Type dick into Google.
Yeah, just type dicks.
Here's how they've been working on this for I think a year and a half now. The way Airtime, it's called Airtime, the way it's supposed to be different from Chat Roulette is that it's tied to Facebook. It's tied to your social network. So there is no anonymity. You are tied to someone either who is your friend or a friend of, within your extended social network. And they're going to use the interests in Facebook. For example, everyone who's a fan of a certain band, right? Jefferson Airplane or something, right? If they're like two friends away from you on Facebook, then you have a higher probability of being matched up. And you can say, I want to talk about Jefferson Airplane with someone.
Okay, so the idea is that if you go two steps out from anybody's social network, you reach like 3 million people or something, right?
And then with those shared interests, then there's higher probability that the conversations that could come up.
So isn't this kind of like Google Hangouts?
It is a play at Google Hangouts, but
it's more, yeah. It's
Google Hangouts, which is a fun feature when you see the Muppets doing it on TV, but in reality, I'm one of the few people that actually is stuck with Google Plus, although even I'm kind of drifting away from it now.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really use it. It's nice for some things, but like,
You know, it's for lonely people who are at home but want to
So it should be perfect for me.
Are you lonely?
All the time. No, not really. I am at home all the time, though. I am often bored.
No, you should do.
I have started Google Hangouts just because I'm bored. Yeah. And I'll find myself in there with 10 random people who kind of look awkward and can't think of anything to say. And about 5 minutes later, everyone goes, okay, bye.
That's exactly what this is going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Omegle has had pretty good success pairing random people, but that's just text-based.
Yeah.
Chat Roulette obviously had some fun things that spawned out of it.
Ben Folds.
Folds thing was the guy that was kind of like Ben Folds.
I met him at a
although didn't Ben Folds end up using it on
yeah,
he ended up doing
on stage,
it on
stage. Yeah. But
that Ben Folds guy though was great.
Merton. I met him. He was really nice, fantastic. He wore his hoodie and glasses because he's still
and
anonymous.
Gabe and Tycho got some mileage out of it as well, where Gabe would say, I will draw you.
Yeah.
And he would just draw like a monstrous penis or something.
Yes. Well, there's some fun
and offend people.
Like creative things that could spawn out of this, and that's what they're hoping for. Interesting discussions and people who actually are looking for, you know, sane people looking for other sane people to have conversations with.
But sane people aren't going to use this kind of service.
That's why they rolled out to Jimmy Fallon.
I also heard from a couple of people that looked into it and decided not to install it because
spyware.
It asks you for an access to an obnoxious amount of your data.
Yeah.
So like,
it really is tethered to.
And I've said before, like privacy in social networks is an illusion. Just if you're gonna go on there, just know that they're looking at everything about you.
What you want to do now is curate your Facebook page so your likes, so you're gonna only find people who like weird things. So when you go on Airtime, you can only find those people.
That sounds like too much work. I'll just be alone, forever alone.
Yeah, I'd rather just die alone than use this. I think.
Well, the other thing is that they're also
I'd rather die alone. The worst condemnation. Oh. I'd rather die alone than use your social
Your
network.
Service is worse than dying by myself in a dark, poorly lit
There's
room.
All, they also
by,
upload
only my
data
lawyer and manager.
And monitor using algorithms to monitor the images, the video.
That doesn't work. We have reports.
This is a big concern because of Chatroulette. They want to get rid of all the dicks.
The dick effect.
And
nobody, they, you know, there's
so
no
wait, how are they,
filter.
Do they have like dick recognition technology
That's what
or something?
They say,
That's
yeah.
exactly
Seriously.
What it is.
Seriously.
They can actually say, like, oh, hold on, this is some guy's
video
dick.
Images
block his
are
image.
Being scanned.
Yeah.
Oh, now that is, you guys have to do a story on how they made that technology.
I think we should just test it.
Like, I mean, they presumably had like prototype model dicks that they had to use as the baseline,
that
right?
Someone went out and sampled thousands and thousands of dicks to see.
And presumably also tits and other kinds of genitalia.
I don't think anybody's complaining about a tit filter. This is a podcast that's not for children,
that's sexist.
By the way. Also, not for kids. If your kids are listening in the car, I apologize.
Do you think they had to model flaccid and erect penises? Because that's a different 3D profile. Yeah.
Profile. Which angle?
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Well,
and I mean, think about the difference, you know, like you could have a really fat finger
What if your face looks like a dick?
And the thing is, it's going to take a second.
I had fish and chips that look kind of like
a dick
yesterday.
I don't know if they have this in America, but in England, there's always been like this particular kind of sexual pervert known as a flasher. Do you have flashers here?
Yeah, the guys that go in the raincoat in the mall and just goes, lot and just, yeah.
Like before, it's yeah. too late. You've seen everything.
Yeah.
Right? You've seen it all.
Reverse Patrick Stewart.
So you could flash. I can't believe that their technology is so good that you can't at least flash someone, at least get somebody, oh my God, that's a penis, before the algorithm catches up and blocks it.
You can report them, and because it's tied to your, because you do need to tether to your Facebook accounts, if you are reported, then that's it. You're off the service.
Well, and they can also put you on. They can also put you on a list of, like, they could do public shaming in the whole nine yards.
But presumably, a lot of the reason why services like Omegle and Chatroulette are popular is people use them for video cyber sex, right?
I would assume so. So random sex, safe sex with random strangers.
It's all dating sites. That's all these things are.
A friend of mine who I won't name used to say that there are two reasons people use the internet. One is because they want to meet girls, and the other is because they want to meet girls.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
What about what about girls on the internet?
They also want to meet girls.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Pinterest, come on.
Yeah. So the weird thing about all of this is that, you know, I don't think girls are going to use airtime because of the dick factor.
Olivia Wilde's not going to be using airtime?
I don't know who Olivia Wilde is.
She's on House. She's in Tron.
Oh.
Was she one of the celebrities they rolled out?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that if you use airtime, your chances of seeing Olivia Wilde versus 1,000 dicks are zero. I bet you will see 100,000 dicks before you see one Olivia Wilde.
This is true.
Oh, I think the ratio is much, much worse even than that.
Well, I'm just saying, if you can get...
I think you could see 100,000 dicks before you even see one actual woman, let alone Olivia Wilde.
Should we move on, gentlemen?
Let's. Although I'm going to go out on a limb and say that airtime is going to be... like, a year from now, no one's going to know what the hell's going on. What the fuck are you doing?
There's an ad on this fucking laptop magazine. I opened up a story.
I fucking hate those ads.
Sorry. Mouse over ad. That's my fault.
So
we quite like laptop magazine, but just not their ads.
Mouse over ads are the worst.
Yeah.
Where pages become like minefields that you've got to, oh, I must go around it. Yeah. I don't want to make it pop up.
Like the double underlined green links. We got to be careful saying shit like this because we couldn't.
Oh, and those are really annoying as well, where it pulls up little mini pop-ups.
That's what I hit just then.
So... E3 is this week. We will get to E3. That's a huge part of this conversation. But there's another convention going on right now in Taipei, Computex.
Oh, is there?
I don't know about that.
Have you been to Taipei?
I've never been to Taipei.
Mm,
was that Taiwan, right?
Taiwan.
Yeah, I've never been. Computex is even bigger than CES.
And what's this for?
All computers.
Just technology?
Okay. Just computers.
Oh. Just computers.
So it's like really boring CES.
And because because many of those OEMs are based in Asia.
Yeah.
But this is where the Asuses of the world announce their new Transformer PCs.
And, okay.
And this year, with Windows 8 coming out, the trend at Computex was a lot of Windows 8 tablets, new form factors, you know, moving away from the Android tablets, using the same hardware, but now putting Windows 8 on them.
Okay.
With RT. So Asus announced, you know, a bunch of Windows 8 tablets and convertibles. The Transformer is going to be a Windows 8 now machine.
Makes sense.
Totally makes sense. And
it's a Windows 8 ARM, though, right?
Windows 8 ARM.
Yeah,
RT. And it's good. Totally good. It's what we need to see. I think what's awesome, because the Android tablets we've never been particularly big fans of.
Well, it just hasn't been a good one. Which is weird, because it still makes no sense to me why there shouldn't be a good one. There just isn't.
Honeycomb wasn't that great.
And by the time Ice Cream Sandwich came out, the whole thing was
7% of Android devices have Ice Cream Sandwich.
That's a big improvement over 3 weeks ago.
Less than 10%. There might be a chance that less than 10% of Android devices will get Ice Cream Sandwich before Android or Google announces the next version of Android.
Man, they got to get on that. It's a joke.
Crazy.
That fragmentation is a joke.
Right now, there's no that is as expected. They are excited about 7%.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, Computex, and I was about to say, because
here's the thing: most normal people, my mom doesn't give a shit if her iPhone doesn't have the latest version, as long as she can still get iMessages and FaceTime.
I'm gonna put you on the spot 2 years from now, because that feels like a good amount of time for stuff to settle down.
So you're saying since the from now to today is basically 2 years since the dawn of Android, of real Android. If you say the Motorola Droid is the first real Android phone,
you're saying Nexus One.
I'm saying Nexus One.
Okay, Nexus One.
I was going somewhere different. I'm just going to ask
Droid.
You two
Droid year, was November, Nexus
2 years from today, which basically is enough time for Microsoft to take a real run at this.
Yeah.
How much market share do you think Windows 8 will have in tablets?
20%.
I think that's optimistic.
I think,
although I think the fact that Android has completely fucked up the tablet effort so far does 20%. Leave an opportunity for Microsoft.
Here's what I'll say. I bet that they have 80% of tabloid sales that aren't iPad.
Okay, that's fair.
So
enough.
if you look at whatever Apple leaves behind, Microsoft gets.
I mean, that's the thing, is that iPad is so utterly, utterly dominant that you almost have to have two separate conversations. It's like, well, there's the iPad, but then, like, so who's going to get what's left over?
Well, there's still time for them to fuck that. But I still maintain that the iPad is the new, air quote, iPad is a step back. I mean, I know Norm really loves the screen and it's great for reading comics and playing Ascension, but for normal use, I'd rather have something that was lighter and had better battery life.
You take your 7-inch iPad when it comes out.
I don't want a 7. I want a 10-inch that weighs a pound.
No, not going to happen.
Okay, so stuff from Computex, the Transformer Windows RT.
Yeah, so all these Android tablets have come out in the past 2 years. All the OEMs, everything they've learned from making these tablets that haven't really sold, are now being that information is now being put toward making Windows 8 tablets, which I think is great.
One of the funny things about Computex is that the companies just assume that there's going to be a lot of industrial espionage. So sometimes they'll just make crazy products that they never expect to market or actually build, just to come to show to kind of present a bunch of red herrings to the competitors. And one of them that I think is very clearly a fake product is I want to make sure I get the name. I think it's the Tai Chi.
The Asus.
I can't get the page up. It's the Asus Tai Chi, and it's basically a laptop with a screen on both sides of the screen.
Yeah. So no way.
It's not a real product. It can't possibly be a real product.
Yeah.
But the idea is that you can give a presentation and you can have your screen and they can have their screen.
Nope.
You can control what's on
it. It's a little bit hard to extrapolate, but based on the experience I had with that Windows 8 laptop last week, playing around with Metro and the tiles and the way that, you know, apps launch and stuff, I could see myself having a perfectly pleasant Windows 8 tablet experience based on the interface.
Yeah.
I think it would be good.
The things you do on Windows 8 tablets.
For the things you do on tablets, which is usually light load, email, web browsing, social networks, music,
it really
media,
isn't that difficult.
Few apps.
Hey, Microsoft, don't fuck up email, which I think the email release preview looks pretty
it's
decent.
It's a little, there's some gaps, but it's nothing that's insurmountable.
I think
it's better on iOS. No. iOS is definitely more fully featured, but there are big holes in what
I
it can do.
I cannot stand mail on iPad.
Norm, you
mail
can't
client.
Change your signature.
I cannot stand that pull down tab, you know, using portrait mode and the way messages are displayed.
Oh, I don't mind that. I like that. I actually use iOS as my main mail interface now.
Don't
and Sparrow on the desktop.
Mess up email.
Because I use Sparrow on the iPhone.
Don't mess up social networking and those services, which I think they're doing okay job with. Don't mess up browsing, which right now
I'm
worried.
It's bad. We'll talk about this in a little bit in the future, but the thing Microsoft is doing really well is embracing third parties. The fact that the stuff that they announced at E3 is coming out on iOS and Android and wherever else it makes sense instead of just Microsoft platforms means that they're at least aware that because they don't have market lead, they have to be the guys that support everything.
And
Live has been about that for a long time.
Bolster their Xbox platform.
Yeah, well, but. Like even the stuff that Live does, like pulling your Flickr and Facebook and Twitter and all the different social networks except for Instagram into one kind of login so that all that stuff is connected to your Live account is actually incredibly useful.
SkyDrive?
Yeah, SkyDrive.
Same thing.
All that kind of stuff. Anything else from Computex?
We weren't there.
There's only two of us.
New hardware form factors. We'll be excited.
The other thing that we maybe didn't talk about last week, but since we're talking about computers real quick and Google and what have you, is I thought it was interesting to see Google kind of pushing a little bit harder on the whole Chromebox thing. That Chromebox is new. They have a new Chromebook. I don't know if that's ever going to make a dent, but they're definitely, you know, with Samsung really making a go at it.
I still think that there's a space for super cheap PCs, notebook form factor, something that doesn't necessarily run ARM. And that you get that is primarily a web browser, a computer that's just a web browser.
The Chromebox is a little. It's cool. I mean, it's nice to see this tiny, teeny, tiny little box.
Yeah.
But like, when it comes to sitting at home with a desktop, do you really want something that's that minimal? I mean, you can have a real computer.
Yeah, but think about. I think that's a business play. So if you're CBS and all of your corporate stuff is on Google Apps, you put that at the receptionist desk and
or
it's disposable.
Salesforce.
Yeah, or Salesforce or someplace where they're not buying – like Salesforce isn't buying fully fledged PCs for the majority of their employees. They're giving them iPads and super lightweight stuff. So in that kind of context, a Chromebox is a dream for IT. Or if you're a mid-sized company, you're just doing a lot of word processing and data and stuff like that, Chromebox is fine.
It's also kind of good in such a way that, you know, you're kind of limiting what your employees can be doing, right? It's not like they're going to be playing Diablo 3 instead of working on their Chromebox.
If you give them the web, they can play Bastion. Well, not very well, but theoretically
they can play a lot of browser games.
Yeah.
You don't know Jack on Facebook.
Yes.
The first Facebook game that I've actually gotten into and played, because you don't know Jack, and it's great.
Multiplayer is good.
Well, there's no screws.
Well, it's asynchronous, but it's still good.
I'm out since there's no. If you can't screw people, I'm not interested.
You can't screw people, which is a big loss.
There are girls on Facebook.
Hmm. Interesting.
Not many, but at least not on mine.
More than well.
What part of Facebook are you on?
I'm not in it. Yeah, I'm not in any way.
You're in the. I don't want to know what parts of Facebook you're on, Gary. I would just say when you see crazy stuff come out of Computex, be aware that probably the companies that are releasing the ridiculous stuff are fucking with their competitors. It's just part of Computex. It's like an icing.
Okay.
Thing. Like the case manufacturers used to build these incredibly elaborate fake cases that would be impossible to manufacture at scale. Just to fuck with their competitors. And then they started selling them for $800.
That was what I love about remember last year at PAX, I actually loved that section where they just had the really, really high-end rig builders with those fancy, lust, water-cooled, mega steampunk-type rigs. Like, I had some serious
moments.
What's that?
End of this year. It's going to be perfect time for you.
I'm going to be in the market later this year.
Yeah, you have like a good Ivy Bridge processor.
After Windows 8 comes out, I want one of those mega water-cooled things.
You should get commissions.
You'll need it for... Diablo, SimCity, and
SimCity, I'm excited about,
and the next Star Wars game, which we'll talk about.
Oh, 1313. Yeah.
The Virgin Mobile has another prepaid plan coming.
This is
$30. Is that data and voice?
I think it's data and voice.
That's crazy.
The second service now that will sell you an iPhone at pretty high price, but then you can have a prepaid phone plan. Which is
I'm tempted to switch. The only problem with those is it's hard to roam, right? Yeah. Like if you go to New York or something, you could potentially get screwed on roaming.
You don't get the peripheral benefits of, you know, a major network.
The value of you don't get to.
I'd like to see more of that. You know, I'd really like to see the 2-year contract getting kind of, you know, eaten away at more and more. Because it is bogus.
It'll be interesting.
A year is long enough. Like when they upped it to 2 years, that really was kind of a slap in the face.
All the Canadians right now
Canadians with 3 and 4 year contracts are cursing.
Oh, the Canadians have even longer.
Yeah.
Oh man, but they get free healthcare though.
That's true, but no Netflix really, no Amazon Instant.
Yeah, if you
no Prime.
If you said to me right now, you can have the Canadian healthcare, but you also have to take Canadian cell phone plans, I'd fucking take that deal. Because that's a net gain overall, don't you think?
You have a pregnant special lady friend.
Well, just in general.
I suppose. I don't know. I'm healthy.
I'm healthy.
Today.
I want new phones. New phones.
New phones every week.
New phones. I don't care about new liver.
that's like saying, I don't need car insurance. I'm not planning to get into a car accident today.
We had a great car insurance conversation.
Really?
In LA, because we were driving in LA, and LA is kind of crazy. We're talking about viral YouTube videos.
Oh my god!
And we're talking about it. We're talking about like crazy accident videos that people are putting online now on YouTube.
So tell the backstory, because the backstory is interesting.
So in Russia,
and I think Saudi Arabia or Dubai,
in some countries, insurance companies are now offering lower rates, affordable rates, if as a precaution you mount a camera in your car. So they can detect how accidents happen.
The problem is there's a lot of fraud in like Russia and hit and runs and stuff. So they mount the dash cam just like the cops have here.
Right. So you put cameras on the car, so pointing at outside, looking at cars around you.
Yeah.
And if you do that and record everything, it's like a black box for your car.
Yeah.
Then your insurance rate goes down.
I think the cameras actually have like accelerometers in them. So when you have an impact,
I don't see a problem with this. You know, it's interesting. Even in the US, there's been some discussion about putting black boxes in cars, and there's a privacy issue, and people go, "Oh, privacy." But actually, it's a good idea.
If it's voluntary.
It's nice if you're in an accident and you're not at fault. Then it's nice to know I wasn't going over the speed limit. This happened. That happened. Like you can actually, there's just more evidence of what actually happened in an accident.
Well, that's a byproduct of this.
Cars already have some of that stuff. Like the airbag, any car with an airbag has a black box that tells you under what conditions the airbag deploys, right? Mm-hmm. How many Gs was the deceleration? What direction was it from? All that kind of stuff.
Right. So as a byproduct of having these cameras in cars for car insurance purposes, the video from these accidents are making its way onto YouTube and websites as viral videos of crazy car accidents from a first-person perspective.
Oh, crap.
Because the video's there. And these videos are getting millions and millions of views. So my genius scheme now is the Norm...
Fred Flintstone, not Sergey Brin.
Chan Insurance Company, free car insurance. I will front your car insurance as long as you put two GoPros in your car, one looking at you, one looking outside. And if you get into an accident, I'll pay for the deductible, pay for everything. But I own the rights to that footage, the viral video footage.
By the way, this is...
earn that CPM.
This is a perfect opportunity to start talking about bait car, but we may want to leave that for outtakes.
I don't know if we should talk about bait car.
But hey, it's technology.
I don't think we should talk about bait car. I don't think we can have a reasoned, sensitive discussion about bait car.
Why?
I don't think we can talk about why we can't talk about bait car without getting into trouble. Let's talk about IE10.
Okay.
Wow, you
that was the worst segue ever, wasn't it?
I mean, are we done with E3? Because there was
we haven't even gotten E3.
Oh shit. Okay.
We're saving it for the end. We're building.
Yeah. Man, this is like there's so much. I'm not used to the podcast having this much actual content. Usually just shit filler. We've actually got real things to talk about.
Thanks. Don't tell them that or they will understand and just I listened to the whole tested podcast in like 25 minutes this week. IE10's flash whitelist.
So when we got we talked about this in the Windows 8 release preview video.
Yep.
IE10 on Windows 8, there's two versions of IE10. One is a Metro design only app in the Metro interface, start screen interface,
yep.
Metro style, and then one is a IE10 on desktop.
Yep.
They are two separate programs.
Never the twain shall meet.
But they do not connect.
No.
They don't communicate, really.
Not really.
But when you're using Windows 8 and you go to a website, they send the same profile. So websites think that you're using a desktop browser when you're in IE8.
Not always.
IE10 for Metro.
Sometimes IE10 for Metro, like for whatever reason, some sites I was going to,
was
you would get the mobile site on the desk on Windows desktop running IE10
in Metro. They're sending the same profile for both IE10s.
It's real dumb.
And there's Flash in IE10.
Oh, so when you say setting the same profile, you mean the browser tells the site,
yes,
hey, I'm IE10.
Yeah. Just IE10. And Microsoft has a whitelist for Flash sites that they're going to enable for IE10 because there's Flash built into the browser now.
Yeah.
But there's no easy way to transfer, to HTML5 when you're on a site that's not on their whitelist yet. So people in testing release preview are having problems.
So say you're on the YouTube
browsing.
HTML5 preview, not that YouTube doesn't work, just as an example.
Right.
Then you can't switch back and forth.
Nope.
Oh, that's lame.
Nope.
That's something. I mean, that part of that's because the OS is early, and people who run those kinds of sites have to update it. This is the bigger challenge,
the fact that they have to actually address these things because there are two versions of IE10, and they're not communicating. They don't really function as one unit. Mm-hmm. That is a problem with Windows 8.
Oh, yeah, and it's interesting because we'll talk about this too. But they rolled out IE for Xbox. They showed IE for Xbox at E3, and it looks exactly like It looks like the HTML5 implementation of IE10 that's in Metro on Windows 8.
Also on Windows for desktop, you will be able to use Firefox, Chrome, whatever you want. But on Metro, in Start Screen, a Metro style app, those web browsers won't have the same rights as IE10.
I'm going to be. Well, no. The thing that's good is if you're in a Metro app and Chrome is your default browser for the system, if you set it up right,
it launches
desktop Chrome.
Well, you can't do that on RT.
Obviously not on RT. I'm going to be really interested to see if Google and Firefox release HTML or
they want
Metro
to. They
versions
want to,
of
but
the,
they're unhappy
the
with what API is available.
It's not particularly capable. Microsoft, I guarantee you, though, Microsoft isn't going to be using hidden APIs for that IE10 implementation because that's how they got in trouble.
Oh, of course. And I mean, it's nothing that Apple's not doing either. Same with iOS. Like web browsers, third-party web browsers on iOS, as good as they are, do not have the same rights as Safari.
Well, no. The difference is you can't on iOS. You can't set a different mail or browser app to be the default handler for mail and browser links. On Windows, you can do that. I mean, you can say, "Hey, this app is my mail app, not this app." At least on the x86 version that we have installed now. I don't know how RT is going to work at all. I would assume that probably is less possible with that. Do we want to talk about Instapaper?
Yeah, there are a couple Instapaper updates. I love Instapaper.
Is this a real official Marco Arment Android Instapaper?
Marco Arment, who wonderful developer. He was the CTO of Tumblr and left to focus full time on Instapaper.
Well, he started Instapaper was a side project.
Side project, and it got big enough, and he's making enough money off it. It's one of those apps that we love, and we're totally happy paying for. And every time there's an update, we know there's thought put in the update, and we love reading his blog posts, his insights as a
developer. Saying you'd like to marry Marco Arment, is what I'm hearing.
He's awesome.
He's your man crush.
He has been very vocal about his distaste for Android, and he doesn't think there's you can make money off Android apps, and he doesn't want to put the same type of mental brain power in developing an Android version of Instapaper, but with you know Kindle Fire and tablets, he felt he had no choice.
And so ice cream sandwich.
And ice cream sandwich. He contract development for Instapaper for Android to a third party developer, someone a developer he'd worked with for Tumblr mobile app, and it's released, so you can get Instapaper on Android. It's not 100% fully featured yet.
Okay.
What does it totally work? It's missing pagination. It's missing full page reading.
Do we need to explain what Instapaper is? An app that lets you.
It's a bookmarking
basically,
system.
Well, bookmarking and caching.
Yeah.
So like if you get on the train in the morning, go to work, and you don't have internet access while you're on your tablet on the train or on your phone on the train, Instapaper will cache your whatever articles you wanted to grab from the web.
Mm-hmm.
So you can read them offline
and present them in a very, very easy
plain
read,
text, basically
plain text format. A lot of competitors out there. Apple's own reading list and Safari. Readability is very popular. Yes. So
it's not
free.
Readability anymore. It's
Readability.
Oh no, the other one, the old one. It's Pocket.
Oh, they change?
Yeah, they changed the name a few months ago.
Instapaper on Android's out, and also Instapaper for iOS had a new update where you get this, it's smart location-based updates. So when you leave your house,
Pocket used to be Read It Later.
Read It Later. So there's Read It Later, Readability, and Reading List.
Right. Reading List doesn't cache.
Doesn't cache, and that's just in Safari.
Right.
When you leave your house with Instapaper, it'll know that you are you're on your commute, getting on your train, and they'll automatically update your reading.
And
articles.
I think that's the first non-Apple app that uses location gates that I've used.
Very smart.
Yeah, it's quite nice. So that's out. It's worth updating if you have Instapaper. On the other hand, Instagram's latest update is kind of shit. So I would recommend not upgrading
Instagram?
To that.
Instagram?
Instacast, the podcast app that we like. The 2.0 version of that, or whatever the most recent one is not particularly good, and I had to revert from a desktop backup. So I would recommend not updating until they kind of fix that. It's they took away some stuff that people really liked, and it's just not as fully featured, not as good as the previous version. Venus Transit. Did either of you guys get to watch that? We were at a meeting, so we didn't get to see the Venus Transit.
No. Gary, did you watch the Venus Transit?
I did. It was amazing.
Did you go outside?
Yeah, so I was actually at Telltale Games, and a bunch of the guys there were outside with a telephoto lens and these weird what looked like 3D glasses. And
Eclipse glasses.
Yeah, they were Eclipse glasses, and they're so super dark. Like, I mean, if you're walking or if you just look at just walk around with them on, they're completely blackout glasses. Because, I mean, that's the level of filtration you need to be able to look at the sun. And I looked up, and it was miraculous. You could see the sun in perfect – so rare that you actually see the sun as just a circular object because it's so bright. You can't see the definition.
It blows out your retina.
So it was amazing to see that, and then to see the tiny little dot of Venus right there, like a little beauty spot. It was amazing.
Did anybody sing that song?
No.
Okay, that's probably good then.
But it was great. It was great to see. I'm glad that I saw it. It was one of those moments where you get like just the tiniest glimpse of like you know what's out there in the universe,
your scale.
Like this planet that's just a teeny tiny
dot.
How about
when you look at the moon?
Well,
does that blow your mind every time you look at the moon?
It still does occasionally when I always find that more impressive when you can see the moon during the day or when it seems extra large as it has done recently.
Yeah.
But we're so used to it that you almost become kind of immune to it.
Is what you're saying.
But I had never seen this before. I'd never seen the sun
never
and
seen again either.
One of its other planets like that. It was amazing to see.
You saw the eclipse a few weeks ago, right? On May 20th.
Didn't really get to where we were. We couldn't get a good look at it. But this actually was more impressive to me than the eclipse.
So, do you know the why the Venusian transit is of significance? Yeah, thank you, Norm. I lost words for a minute there
because it's very rare.
No, it's actually one of the first ways that early scientists were able to calculate the distance from the Earth to the Sun.
Oh.
So what they did is in, I think, 1761 or something like that, Edmund Hubble and Johann Kepler and a bunch of other early scientist physicists, dudes from the Royal Academy. The place in England.
Okay.
Basically went to all parts of the world, all different latitudes, because they were able to predict it because of one in 1716, I think, And they went to all different parts of the world and with very accurate clocks and measured the time it took Venus to transit. And with that information from different latitudes, they were able to tell what the angle difference was between their perspective of Venus and our perspective of Venus and use that to calculate an astronomical unit.
That blows my mind.
Yes.
And the mental leap it takes to be able to comprehend that.
Here's the really mind-boggling thing. Scientists from all around the world, or at least Western Europe, at that point, Western Europe was where scientists were, and the Middle East, but they weren't talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
England and Great Britain and France were at war, like hardcore blowing shit up for like 30 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
The scientists put aside their differences and worked together for the good of all mankind so that they could know how – because up until that point, they had no idea how far apart we were from Venus, how far apart we were from the sun, how far away Jupiter was. They just knew that it was small, and they had a pretty good idea. That it was further away or closer. So it was
amazing.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Last
thing I want to talk about before we get into...
Ray Bradbury?
No. We'll talk about Ray Bradbury at the end. Scroll down.
VGA ports on skinny laptops?
Don't want to talk about that. Last thing before Ethan...
No, I'm not talking about the catcopter.
Catcopter.
Oh,
let's not.
It was so sad and funny. Hilarious.
It was very polarizing. Everyone thought it was either really cool or just were really put off by it.
Well, it's not cool at all.
I both hated myself for laughing and couldn't stop laughing, like simultaneously. It was quite it was unusual because the cat was like in full lol cat. paint the word picture, Norm, since you brought this
Someone's cat died.
Yeah, an artist of some kind.
Yes, and
fucking art.
As some people do when their beloved pets pass. They preserve the animal, the memory of the animal.
It's okay, Chloe. We won't stuff you.
Using the art of taxidermy, stuffing that animal with preservatives
and stuffing,
literally, and glass eyes and all sorts of nonsense. It is horrifying. I think taxidermy is terrifying.
I agree. I think taxidermy just in general is very unpleasant.
Yeah. Did you rub Luchador's
weird.
Nose?
I am very uncomfortable with the idea of taxidermy, of living things being preserved that way.
Have you ever seen Will Rogers' horse?
No.
It's very creepy.
But this was no ordinary taxidermy project. Being the artist as this guy was, he turned his cat into a skin for his quadricopter.
It was really...
all limbs out.
The four arms and legs of the cat became the beams.
Flayed out.
That the propellers came. It was fucking horrifying. But the look on the cat's face.
Oh,
was,
my goodness.
And I don't even really like
I don't know what's more
much.
Scary than walking down the street and seeing a dead cat flying at you in full quadricopter form. That is
I didn't know. When I first saw it, I honestly thought it was some kind of weird fake or something.
It could be. I mean, it very well could be.
But this is a perfect example of how what you think is cool, what the idea of like what's internet cool and what's actually cool is often so different. Like, on the face of it, guy takes his dead cat and turns it into a helicopter.
Yeah.
In theory, goes, that sounds awesome. You see in reality, it's actually horrific.
No, it does not sound awesome.
But it is kind of an ultimate mashup of like Rafflecopter and Lolcats. Like it seems kind of perfect. But no, it was horrendous.
Yeah, but funny.
It is one step above those people who taxidermy squirrels and dress them up in dioramas or rats.
You mean Michael Scott?
Michael Scott does that?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, no, in that movie, the bad movie. Strucks for Dinner or whatever.
Well, many Schmucks. Leaps there with Steve Carell, Michael Scott, and a character he played in another movie.
You knew where I was going. We went to L.A. and we saw E3.
Are you okay? Oh my god!
Why did
a
you
whole
bring
new
up the
rich
picture?
Vein of con- no, I don't want. No, I don't want to see it. I've seen it enough.
Really terrifying. Hey, so Microsoft announced some stuff.
Yeah, let's talk about the E3 experience because Will and I and Gary, we all have very different E3 experiences than, you know, a video game website and Giant Bomb. We didn't see the press conferences because we were traveling.
Yeah.
And we only were on the show floor for a day.
Yeah.
And Gary, you watched all the press conferences, which is how you
– I didn't get to watch all of them live. I didn't get to see all of them, but – it is, for me, the preferred way to experience E3 now. You know, in my capacity as a games journalist for many years, I went to about 10, the first 10 E3s, maybe more. And so I'm pretty familiar with the E3 experience. It hasn't changed much.
Yeah,
there was a period there where it got smaller for a bit, and then it got much bigger again.
Got smaller, went to Santa Monica,
bombastic as ever. There's a lot, you know, it's great. It's fun to be able to see all your friends from the industry and see all the latest games. And there is a sense of excitement. Like, this is what the industry's all about. Like, we're seeing it all happening here live. It's great. But the reality is achy feet, long lines, shitty food, and just general kind
everything
of fatigue. And like, you're so ready to get out of there.
And unless you're, you know, willing to wait in lines or have private meetings to see, you know, behind closed door demos. Everything you watch online now, because of how easy it is to stream live video, archive high definition footage.
You're actually getting a better experience than many of the people in the audience.
You get a much better sense of the overview of all the games.
I mean, people were tweeting their pictures of like where they're getting ready for the Xbox conference, and they tweeted like from where their seat was, and they were like up in the nosebleeds, and I'm like, I'd rather watch it from here.
Yeah.
Where did they do the Staples, or are they elsewhere now?
Each one's at a different place.
Yeah. Because it's all live stream, it's no longer this press event. It's just a big consumer event.
But the big overall picture that I wasn't there, but you can get a pretty good sense these days. That's the whole point, is that this felt very much like an end of generation conference. Like, there wasn't a lot of excitement. We kind of felt like, next year's going to be the big one. There was, I think pretty much everybody, with the bizarre exception of Ubisoft, seemed to underwhelm pretty much. I am an outlier in that I actually am excited. I was a little bit excited about Nintendo. I'm more excited about Wii U than I was, whereas a lot of people seem to have the opposite effect. But Microsoft, was there one thing out of Microsoft that we were excited about this year?
So as somebody who hasn't watched any of the conferences yet, and probably actually won't at this point, I'll probably go through and cherry pick out the stuff I want to see, knowing what everybody said was interesting.
Yeah.
Going to the floor cold without knowing what people were excited about is very, very informative.
Okay.
You get a completely different impression. Like I went and I watched a couple of the clip reels, and we saw like people playing Borderlands. We saw the Colonial Marine stuff.
Yeah. You walk into that in terms of the showcasing of the booths and stuff. You walk into one of the halls and you see this massive Borderlands booth, and you think, oh man, Borderlands is the hot thing from 2K. But then you really have to go around to the back and see XCOM.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think...
Well, and that's the beauty of E3, is oftentimes the real gems are kind of waiting to be found off in the dark corners of
If you have the time, the patience to go...
Didn't see a lot of Kentia this year. Usually
there's no Kentia. It's gone. Kentia. It's been gone for
two months. There this year?
It's been gone since they came back from Santa Monica.
Oh, that was the best part.
Yeah, it's a parking lot again. Yeah. They talked about this in the Bombcast. You should
that's
listen
a shame.
To the Bombcast. They had E3 mysteries.
So let's talk about the big...
Well, do you want to just go through them real quick?
I just want to say the feeling that I saw from people I follow on Twitter and friends and all that coming out of the press conferences was kind of different than the feeling I got walking on the floor. Because the show is less packed than it has been in the past. They're letting fewer people in. Like, they're being much tighter on credentials for journalists and stuff like that. So
good.
Which is, fantastic. I'm all for that. You could walk around the show and there weren't any jammed up points or anything like that. It was really nice. I didn't feel like there were any worse, like there were fewer good looking games walking around the floor. I feel like there was probably some stuff that people were disappointed in. I feel like it's weird that there's Halo 4 and we're seeing fourth Gears of War and some of that kind of stuff. But I don't think that this was a particularly bad year for E3. I think it's just a kinder, quieter,
I think it was
gentler conference.
I don't think there's very, very few really standout games. Obviously, Nintendo's the only company already with kind of one foot in the next generation. Everyone else were kind of waiting for the next big shoe to drop. It does disappoint. One thing that I did notice about watching it on how the internet experience is different, and I find it quite annoying, I guess, disappointing, whatever you want to call it, is that, you know, I generally don't like the snarky, cynical, negative nature of the internet.
Yeah.
And that kind of peanut gallery aspect of all that snark and cynicism, it's the easiest thing in the world to do is sit back and just like throw peanuts
shit
at people.
Stuff, yeah.
But that's basically that's what the internet becomes. It's a highly focused peanut gallery. We're on the forums and on Twitter. I'm sorry to say I get sucked into it as well, because it is kind of a mob mentality. But like, it's just constantly people going, instant just judgments. Oh, this looks shit. Oh, this is boring. Oh, this is terrible. It's like, really? At least give it a chance. But if anything, E3 played into that, because there wasn't a lot of tremendously exciting stuff.
Well, and I kind of wonder how long they'll continue doing the whole giant press conference thing. I mean, I know they stream, they put those out on TV. They're on TV now, which is really weird to me.
Yeah, they're on Spike.
And game trailers and all sorts of places.
Yeah.
I don't know who's served. Like, it used to be that those press conferences were partly for investors and partly for press, and now they're on TV, so they're not necessarily for investors anymore. They're for people who actually go out and buy games.
I would rather they make those announcements and show those trailers off during those press conferences than during a Spike TV VGA Awards.
Oh, and absolutely. Agreed. But I just, like, the other thing is, I mean, even on games like the Sony, I'm going to call it Sony Smash Brothers because I can't remember what it's called, Sony All-Stars, I think. Like,
right.
That game, all of the surprises of that game were out well before the press conference. Everybody knew everything. They felt like they knew what they needed to know about it beforehand. And it ends up just being really weird and kind of boring to sit through.
That's not Sony's fault.
I thought Sony had one of the better conferences. They at least had more games that I'm excited about. I'm excited about this new David Cage game, Beyond. I'm really excited about The Last of Us. It looks fantastic.
Yeah.
I personally am not interested in Wonder Book, but I think it's great that Sony is trying something like that. It's a new original thing. Yeah. I thought they generally had a good showing.
The company that released the PS3 as the living room computer focus least on the PS3 as a living room computer, HTPC.
Well, Nintendo, I think, focused the least, but...
And Microsoft went full on the other way, because I think they are currently winning the battle of this is... If you said to me right now, I just want one box in my living room, what should I get? I'd say get a 360.
So let's talk about Microsoft.
Yeah.
The big announcement from them, obviously Halo 4 is coming. There's a new Gears of War coming.
A lot of sequels, a lot of iterations. Yeah.
Some of our arcade games were announced that those look okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about Tony Hawk. I'm excited about that the Dark Light, the side-scrolling thing. That looked interesting.
I remember back in time when Microsoft would at least devote 10 minutes of its big conference to talk about PC games.
Well, those days are gone.
The Santa Monica one.
Which is funny because,
You know, the Santa Monica press conference, I remember the moment that I died because I was at PC Gamer at the time, sitting there next to the PC Gamer staff at the Microsoft press conference. And the big announcement for games for Windows was Viva Pinata for PC.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bet.
Microsoft has given up on PC. I mean, they had that Games for Windows initiative. They fucked it up, and I think they're just like, eh. Hey, other companies, third parties take care of that
now. We have
now.
Easy controller support in widescreen now. So Games for Windows was a success from that standpoint.
I guess.
The thing about Microsoft...
They were more heavily focused on non-game applications than anyone else.
And you know what's funny about
that? And that's not illegitimate. I mean, that's what these machines are becoming. So I think that's legitimate. But when you go to E3, I think there's an understanding or an expectation you're going to see games.
Right. Why not CES?
So, what's funny is at CES, they don't talk about games either. They don't talk about games at all at conferences with the Xbox, except for maybe
GDC. Well, hey, I mean, technically it is Electronic Entertainment Expo. And that really does cover, technically that would cover non-game things as well.
So we're rolling back into CES. CES spawned E3. Now right. E3 is going to spawn back into CES.
You cannot argue the trend that games are becoming more... Game boxes are not just game boxes anymore. In the same way that phones aren't just phones anymore, they're multifunction devices. True. So is that... with the exception of Nintendo, and even Nintendo is going to be going in that direction now with the Wii U, even though they didn't talk about it, clearly Netflix, Amazon Video, all that stuff's going to be there. All the game boxes now.
Yeah.
And I'm bringing Wii U forward into that. This is what they do now. They play games, and they also do tons of other things.
Smart boxes.
Microsoft has done the best job in supporting content partners and building. I mean, the Netflix, the MLB TV, the ESPN relationships, that content is.
But with the exception of Netflix and MLB, none of those experiences are particularly good. The HBO Go app is not a good app. I mean, it's good enough.
If all you want to do is dial up content and watch it, I mean,
it is so fucking frustrating.
The interface could be better.
Which is why interface
And it loses shit. You go through and save a whole bunch of content and it just eats it after a while.
Oh, and by the way,
that shit just doesn't work.
I'm getting sick of my fucking Kinect as well. I'm going to unplug the fucking thing.
Why?
Because I was watching HBO Go to catch up on an episode of Veep that I had missed, and I got a bottle of Snapple and I'm shaking it. And the fucking Kinect starts giving me grief.
Oh, see, I find I use the Kinect more when I'm watching HBO Go because it's easier to say Xbox pause than it is to get the interface.
I think Microsoft is realizing now that it's actually better simply as a voice recognition device
than
as a movement recognition device. I've had it with Kinect as a movement device.
So Forbes,
it's not reliable. This yeah. is bullshit. It's Nobody slow. Wants to do this.
Like wave your hand in front of the
yeah,
screen.
It's annoying. It's inaccurate. It
this
takes
is
too
not
long.
The interface you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want the Jedi powers over okay. my Xbox.
The
do
Jedi
not
powers work.
Work
if it actually worked as it intended.
But it doesn't Imagine work. It it's doesn't. Fucking annoying. It's hypersensitive.
Okay.
I'm trying to watch a video, and every single time I pick up my drink, you get this in the corner, and it's
hand.
Distracting.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is the interfaces to control TV and video content on your Xbox are not good. The remote control is not real good because typing in text is a pain in the
ass. And also, you forget
control.
Which button does what. Like, I
well,
still
me,
don't know what's pause
the little, the
on,
Xbox
on the four buttons. Is it B or is it X? And sometimes you back it out.
Or if you're using a universal remote, that's hard to search with because it's hard to use a keyboard with a universal remote.
Yeah.
So
Forbes had this story about Microsoft dominating the living room now, interviewed Ballmer. And
I gave you a perfect segue.
I will talk about Slugfest.
I fucking softballed that over to you. All you had to say was, so they introduced smart glass.
I will talk about this. And so Microsoft really wants to own the living room in fear that Apple will come in late this year, beginning of next year with their TV.
Apple is in the living room right now. The thing that nobody gets is that AirPlay is the winner and nobody's realized it because most people don't understand what it does.
Oh, especially executives. So Microsoft announced smart glass, this initiative, which is their AirPlay.
It's really a dumb name. Can we say? I think it's anything smart something. Yeah. I just think wow, that is a really dumb name.
It's actually a good rule of thumb, I think, to say that if it says smart in the name, that's the one thing you can pretty much guarantee it is not.
Right.
Or if it says extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what it means is that whoever named it is kind of lazy, but whatever. Okay. So dumb name aside,
it smart glass. And this is the new way to control your Xbox with a device that's not a controller or the Kinect.
Such as what?
Such as a tablet or phone. Any
and
tablet
they
or phone.
Okay, good, because they did say you can use it as iPhone and
iOS,
Android. Right? Because
they're
gonna sticking to your guns and saying, you need a Windows phone, they're just going to fuck themselves doing it.
See, if you're Apple and you have half of the market, you can do that. If you're Microsoft and have none of the market, you can't
have
really.
You have to play with the other guys.
So it's not an AirPlay competitor. It's not AirPlay in that you get screen sharing. Or that if you're in a web browser and you're playing a video, you can just push that video to the TV. It's not that.
It's very. Well,
but
it's
why
very,
isn't it that? Because that's the one feature we really
like.
That's
the one I want. Exactly. Because it's not native.
I was doing it last night. I wanted to show Leah the new trailer for Django Unchained that came out. Yeah. Dialed it up on my iPad. Yes. Boom. AirPlay. It's
Microsoft
up on the big screen in 1080.
Get
no,
that
no, no, no.
Yet.
You can do that from Windows tablets and Windows phones.
You cannot.
Yeah, you can.
Nope.
Yes, you can. You can do it from a Windows 8 machine to an Xbox. It doesn't work with this update, with the version of Windows 8 we have. You can play to the Xbox. It works.
Play video, screen sharing?
From a Windows 8 machine. You can't screen share, but you can play video and you can play content. You
it's
can play
not,
music.
It's not native.
Norm, God damn it is native. He demoed it in that when we were with him in that meeting the other day.
Yep. Running within the Smart Glass app application.
No, what I'm saying is that is not part of Smart Glass. That is a thing you can do from a Windows 8 machine.
Oh, no, no. I'm talking specifically about Smart Glass. So, okay,
yes.
Talk about the experience. So you have a Windows 8 tablet in your hand right now. Okay. You're an Internet Explorer. You play YouTube.
Yeah.
Okay. And you want to send YouTube to Xbox. How does that happen?
You hit play to Xbox from the share thing.
And then what happens on the Xbox?
I have no idea. I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah. That's not happening.
Presumably, the Xbox would play it.
Right. No, my assumption is that the Xbox just plays.
Xbox then launches YouTube application, the YouTube app.
Did you try it?
Launches a YouTube app, and then you have to go
play. Oh, so it just sends like a cookie to the Xbox? It's not actually streaming the video? Okay.
Nope. It launches applications.
The streaming, the Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi back and forth is kind of the dumb part of AirPlay?
No, no, Apple does cookie also, but it's hidden. So it looks like it's streaming.
I keep talking.
So with AirPlay, when I'm on the iPad, I'm playing YouTube, and I'm sending it over, it's fast enough that it feels like real time when I'm scrubbing, but it's not downloading to the iPad and sending the video from the iPad to the Apple TV. It's playing the video from Apple TV on YouTube because Apple TV can play YouTube and can play video.
Well, I mean, I guess that's a more efficient way to do it than actually streaming the content.
Yeah.
If I'm just sending a thing saying, I want to watch this, and Apple TV says, well, I can fetch that for you, and I'm just all I care about is the end result.
Yeah, exactly. But screen sharing does actually push.
Okay.
Screen sharing, it pushes.
Yeah, because sometimes
in that case,
you are pushing.
With the
what's
Xbox
on your
implementation, it is launching an application. And with Smart Glass, it's launching like HBO Go within Smart Glass application.
So, how's this going to work once they bring iPhone and Android into the mix?
Whether you're on a Windows phone or a Windows 8 tablet or the iPad, you have to launch a separate application called Smart Glass. It becomes a full screen application.
Mm-hmm.
And within Smart Glass, you have the option then to launch HBO Go, control HBO Go, control all the Xbox content, music, HBO Go, movies, you know, Paramount, whatever.
Okay.
And not only do you control it, so Will has that problem, you know, if HBO Go right now on the controller is kind of slow, right? Like you have the browsing, finding your episode of Veep. If you don't have that bookmark, it's not a great interface.
Right.
With the Xbox Dash.
Yeah.
But if it's on a tablet and you can just browse through and flip through a list of episodes
right.
with your finger,
right.
much easier.
But right. this is all from within one app.
Within the Smart Glass app.
Okay.
You can throw up an episode of Game of Thrones. You could do that from Smart Glass.
So the Smart Glass has what? Separate sub-apps within it?
It knows what apps you have on Xbox.
Oh, okay.
So the apps that developers are now going to develop for Xbox, like HBO
okay.
or Netflix, will have a Smart Glass component. They'll be able to tap into the Smart Glass API. So when you launch Smart Glass, it'll know on Smart Glass.
Okay, I can see that. So basically it becomes like a fancy Harmony remote
exactly.
for your
that
Xbox.
Is exactly it. And not only is it a Harmony remote in that you could control the Xbox and control the content, it feeds the content now back to Smart Glass.
I can see that working.
So for example, the demo, they gave two demos.
Now, one, you know what would also be great? I don't know if this is a feature, is if for people that don't have Kinect, mm-hmm. if you could also utilize the microphone on your tablet to do voice recognition, do voice search.
That
through,
would be smart.
It.
I don't know if they're actually do that. So the demo they gave. HBO Go, because there's already additional functionality in HBO Go content-wise, if you watch HBO Go on your iPad, you can watch the video, and then if you have it in, I think, portrait mode, you get the additional information on the bottom half of the screen.
Yeah.
Like you get the map of Westeros, or you get, here's some behind-the-scenes commentary, right? The enhanced experience.
But and by the way, that's fucking bullshit. I hate all that stuff. Somebody, I can't remember who it was, somebody wrote a great article about this the other day.
It's just distraction.
Saying, like the most immersive experience for Game of Thrones is just to fucking watch Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's, if I'm sitting there with a thing going, here is the behind-the-scenes or whatever,
it's
like, that's taking me out of the experience.
But it's for the second
all these
viewing.
Distractions. I but guess.
It doesn't,
it's the, yeah. it's a DVD but, commentary.
But, I mean, have you ever been tempted to do that? Does it in any way seem interesting to you?
There's always something more interesting than the extra garbage stuff that they pack in with that.
It's a problem with content. So if it's DVD commentary, if I have, like, if I'm watching a Blu-ray and I want to watch, you know, James Cameron's commentary of
Avatar
or Terminator 2, and it is, and I get the commentary on my screen with like photos,
but at that point it's like show notes.
No, it is show notes. I would love that. Not as okay, the first okay. viewing, not as the original viewing, but if I want that commentary experience, I don't want that on the big screen.
I guess. I mean, it's all the Blu-ray features that yeah. we've seen just pulled onto a second screen,
which is what Smart Glass is going to do. So they're going to allow HBO, they're going to allow, you know, Netflix or whoever to program content that will push the Smart Glass as your content video plays.
I don't think people are going to do it. It's a massive expense. It's going to take a ton of time.
Well,
it's producing a ridiculous amount of content. I don't think they're
I don't think they're going to do the new content. What they're going to do though is right now when I watch TV show, even if it's like the first viewing, because I'm sometimes bored by TV, I will IMDb as I watch TV.
Yeah, but see, I'm much more likely to be doing a crossword puzzle or on Twitter or something like that when I'm watching TV.
Sure, different people do different things. I find that I IMDb a lot when I watch TV. And they demoed something that actually does what I would do. So they launched School of Rock was their video demo.
Yeah.
And as the,
School of Rock.
As the video played, using Xbox, obviously, so it's a rented video or a video that you bought using the Xbox video service. On the Smart Glass app on your iPad or your Windows 8 tablet, you got the options. You got your IMDb with powered by Bing. You got, you know, all the movies that Jack Black has been in or whoever is on screen at that time. You know, whoever.
Yeah, it was somebody weird when we were watching. I can't even remember it. Somebody who's
so when you have that moment of, oh, who is that actor?
It's Miranda Crossgrove.
Right. Who is that actress? Right. Oh, it's Miranda Crossgrove on your tablet now. It'll say, okay, in this scene is Jack Black, is Miranda Crossgrove. You can click their names, and then you can have a list of all the scenes that they're in that movie.
Nobody's going to do that. It's a ridiculous amount of effort for the five people who are going to use Smart Glass that way.
I don't know why it's – if the credits are already there.
But the credits are there for the final movie, not for who's in the scene right now, which is what they demo.
So it is a team of people who just index movies. I mean, it's just data.
Yeah, but I don't get what the benefit of having that data is. This is something the TiVo app did ages ago, right? The TiVo app for iPad does the exact same thing. When you're watching Fallon and Jennifer Love Hewitt is on Fallon that night, it says, "Oh, Jennifer Love Hewitt's on Fallon. Do you want to see the other?"
So something? Maybe they're already doing.
Do you want to record Portland? Do you want to record? She's on this episode of this, and she's on this weird masseuse show. And
someone is doing it already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't scene by scene. It was for the whole episode.
Sure. Regardless of how much work and how much money it will cost to actually make this useful, if they can find ways that users actually will use it and put money into those ways, if they find that through testing, a lot of people want to know about credits, a lot of people want to know trivia or want to know quotes that they can tweet or whatever, right?
They should just put Bejeweled down there. Because that's what people are doing.
Maybe that's what they'll do eventually. Maybe Smart Glass will be a way for you to play a sponsored version of Bejeweled as you're watching TV.
That sounds horrible.
Because that's what people are doing. If they respond to what people actually are doing and not try to predict it and put money on that, then it'll be successful.
I think the AirPlay, the ability to play music and video and stuff like that, and
is more useful.
Slideshows is much, much more
and
useful.
And Smart Glass is not that.
But I mean, they do have that. That is a thing that it works.
Not very well.
Well, okay.
Not as easy as iOS right now.
The fall update will make that easier, I'm sure. I would hope so.
I would hope so as well. But the ability right now to watch a video on YouTube and then have it immediately playing in the back on the TV because the Xbox just happens to be on is not the same as the Apple TV.
The only way that would be better is if it was actually built into the TV and you hit the button and it switches to the right channel.
Well,
on the TV,
you know what? If you buy an Apple television next year.
Oh, really?
That will probably be there.
Next March, maybe?
Yeah. The seamlessness. It's all about the seamlessness of it. Extra loading screens, extra steps. That's why right now with the Xbox Live application on iOS. The companion app. You can launch games and you can launch video with that. It just doesn't work. Like when you launch it, it'll load the Xbox video loading screen like for Hugo or something. And it'll give you the option to rent the movie or buy it. Or a game. It'll go to the game... the arcade menu, but
you're saying there have to be no speed bumps.
No speed bumps.
I agree with that.
And right now, it is all speed bumps.
And honestly, even on the Apple TV side, I don't know what it is, but sometimes even my Apple TV is kind of squirrely. I'll try to AirPlay something, and I'll just get the little. It won't always connect up.
Yeah, it won't kick out.
Right. And another thing is, Apple TV, I think, is still going to be more preferred because it's low power. It's low noise. I don't want to have my Xbox on all the time.
Dude, there's going
to
be a 99. This time next year, they're going to announce the PSONE version of the Xbox that is one chip in an Apple TV.
And just
Xbox.
Arcade games. And
just downloadable stuff.
You
that's
know what?
My bet.
That would be awesome.
That's a nice idea.
Yeah, I would like that.
The other interesting thing about Smart Glass, it's like I think the thing that we're not talking about enough, which is the important part, is actually the finding content on the service side of it. Because right now, the big reason first off, search inside HBO Go doesn't work right. So you can't search inside the different – some of the content apps will let you search within them. Some of them won't.
Yeah. Speed bumps.
Yeah. If that stuff worked properly and you had a keyboard interface on your phone, you could just – I'll open the app and boom, it launches really fast and I can type in what I want.
Xfinity does a better job.
It's just why when I'm using the Xbox, I have the keyboard attachment for the controller, which anytime I know I'm going to be searching media, I always use that thing.
Right. But then you
still
have
less
to use
than
a
ideal.
Game controller to type your stuff. And also that keyboard is awful. Like the keys are all in the wrong places and it's hard to –
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah. Okay, other stuff from Microsoft. We talked about IE10 on Xbox a little bit. I think this is moderately interesting at best. The neat thing here is that you can – this is where the AirPlay stuff, the AirPlay equivalent comes in because you can blast a URL from your phone or your tablet to the IE10 on the browser and it takes you directly to the page. So you can share it with everybody
in
the room.
And use your pinch zoom on the phone.
That's cool. Exactly. Yeah, all right.
And use the phone as a trackpad. The demo that they were giving of the phone being used as a trackpad was one of those ones where you like are swiping like this to go across the screen. Mm-hmm. They'll fix that by the time they have to fix it by the time it's launched or it's going to be useless.
Yeah. If they can't get web browsing on TV right by now,
there have been so many poor efforts.
Well, but if you can use the phone as a trackpad or something like that versus using a gamepad,
that's the key.
It's actually kind of like.
Have you tried browsing using AirPlay's mirroring?
Yeah,
using Safari.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It works completely smooth, but the font just doesn't look right.
Yeah, because the pixels are wrong.
Yeah, DPI isn't good.
Yeah. Well, no, it's because it's
rendering for a different DPI.
And then, do we want to talk about games? Halo 4, Gears of War.
Well, I don't know. Before we even get onto games, again, I think Microsoft wasn't even done with the non-game stuff, right? Xbox Music, Nike Plus, like there was a whole bunch of like non-game applications that they're really
going into that stuff. An app ecosystem coming out of the end of this generation. They're in a position to lead going into the next.
You know, we have been talking probably for the last 10 years about the war for the living room and one box to rule them all and all that. I kind of feel like we're actually getting there. Well, don't you think?
So this Xbox, the Xbox stuff that we saw, the IE on the desk, on the Xbox especially, kind of makes me think, because for a while, you know, there's always been talks about the third screen, right? Because the idea is that one screen is the computer, one screen is the phone. And for a long time, we were supposed to believe that the third screen was the living room.
They're calling it second screen.
I understand. Well, okay, so second screen was the
hot buzzword.
Okay, so the second screen was supposed to be the living room. And then tablets came out, and that, I think, immediately usurped the TV as a second screen.
They're saying second screen as the tablet or whatever you're holding on the couch is your second screen.
Yeah, I mean, that's already ingrained in our habits. It's just that second screen exists because what's on the first screen isn't interesting enough to hold our full attention. Like, I'm looking at Twitter or the internet, whatever, while the, you know, bait car or whatever is on TV.
I love bait car. Yeah, I'm interested in seeing how that ships. That'll all be part of the fall update. So after Windows 8 is out and they update the Xbox console, and hopefully, I mean, last year they made it a lot worse. So hopefully, this next one will be a lot better, right?
Right.
I mean, they can't make it a whole lot worse. I can't imagine what they would do to make it worse.
Since we were talking about HBO and stuff like that, just as a side issue, just real quick, I thought it was interesting that you know, we've been seeing this groundswell of people that want to try and that would love HBO to offer their service a la carte. Like, I just pay $10 a month for HBO Go.
Yeah.
There's a big website now that's got a lot of people signed up, and they're really petitioning HBO. There have been a lot of interesting articles though from people that actually are in the business who are trying to explain to these people. Yeah, it sounds great, but the model just doesn't work.
We've had conversations, and they're making way more than $10 a month.
Ari Emanuel explained it pretty clearly. I mean, the amount of money it takes and to make those shows, it could not be supported by subscription.
It has to come through the cable carriage fees. Yeah. They can't do it through like $10 a month subscriptions.
I mean, I think they did a survey. I think $12 was the average price that someone would pay for a la carte HBO.
Comcast paying HBO for each person? Is it just that Comcast gives them a minimum guarantee?
I mean, those amounts are obviously very contentious. This is why AMC and Dish Network are in a big fight right now.
Right.
But that's where the money comes from. I mean, you can look at the Netflix model and say, well, look, Netflix is now taking its $8. I mean, they've obviously got a huge user base, $8 a month, and they are now starting to be able to create their own HBO-like content. But it's just a toe in the water to create the full suite of content HBO offers, and boxing and all the movies that they run. I mean, look at Game of Thrones. That ain't a fucking cheap show to make.
I mean, you look,
none of their stuff is cheap.
They have three series running at any given time most of the year.
Yeah.
And that's a shitload of TV to produce, especially high quality.
It's all prestige stuff.
Yeah.
And it might end up being like a Hulu Plus model where, you know, you pay $15 a month or $20 a month just to get it on computer. But if you want it in the living room, it's extra $5 or something.
I don't know. I think that unfortunately that the incremental stuff is bad.
The model is there in that you just would just buy the discs. If you really want the content,
well, way
that
late.
That's
the price
you just got to deal with it.
The one thing I would say is that Netflix is starting to suffer. I mean, it seems like people are icing Netflix out because I don't know if you've been watching lately, but the quality of new stuff coming to Netflix has decreased sharply in the last, let's say, 6 months.
InstaStream has never been fantastic, on par with disc.
Well, for a while it kind of peaked, and now we're seeing.
There was a huge explosion of suddenly instant.
Like
instant
NBC
used
Universal
to be, instant
stuff
used to be just
and,
like
yeah.
Sci-Fi Channel movies and just garbage, and now it's actually become quite good. But I think you're right that it has kind of plateaued.
Well, the expectations are higher.
We've seen peak Netflix.
The expectations of Instant Stream being a value add and now it being the primary service.
Right. Well, the thing is, the studios realized that pricing that at $8 a month was gouging their eyes out, and here we are. Let's talk about Sony real quick. They didn't have any hardware to show. We saw a couple of Move games.
Move, I think, Wonderbook aside, I think, you know, Sony clearly, I realize that they're throwing good money after bad probably with Move.
Of the big three booths at E3, and this is something I guess you can only get from going on the show floor, Sony's was the most empty. There's the most consoles.
And usually it's full.
Open.
Which is a shame because I actually thought they had some of the better looking games.
So definitely there was a line for the, you know, the All-Stars game.
I think the...
And a line to see, you know, God of War.
And Dust and stuff
the
like
sad
that.
Thing about, a- the sad thing about the PlayStation All-Stars game, and I think some other people commented on it, it just is a great way to illustrate how not great their stable of, you know, first-party IPs are.
You know, I
they really had to stretch it to fill out that roster of characters.
Looking at the roster of characters, though... Like, no, there's more there than I thought.
That's more indicative of the type of games you get in Sony. Just aren't that don't cater to like the action games. Like, you know, Heavy Rain, great game, but you're not going to get Heavy Rain characters in that kind of game.
I mean, I don't know why anybody's going to play that game as anything other than Parappa.
How do you play it like Parappa?
He's one of the characters. I'm just playing Parappa.
Oh, I see.
Time.
Okay,
nothing but Parappa.
Yeah, Parappa versus Nathan Drake. I mean, if nothing else, where else are you going to see that?
I mean, those games are always ridiculous. I mean, well, I say those games, but I mean, Smash Brothers has always been really ridiculous.
But as a big fan of Heavy Rain, I'm very excited to see the new David Cage game. That looks exciting.
Yeah.
I thought The Last of Us looked phenomenal. And Naughty Dog, you know, can do no wrong in my eyes.
As a dude who isn't a huge fan of Uncharted, I am stoked about Last of Us for no other reason than it is something different and tension from having a fight with three dudes sounds really good.
What do you think about Wonder Book?
It was very telling to me that Nintendo didn't show any augmented reality stuff after they've been pushing it really hard for 2 years.
Yeah.
So I do not,
And you know, again, it was a demo, but it didn't work great. You know, more than once the Sony guy had to say, it's a live demo, folks.
Here's the problem. The fundamental problem with Wonder Book and all that augmented reality stuff is it's really cool in demos. And then when you actually try to use it, like if you're playing Kinectimals and you're watching the screen, but the thing's supposed to be in front of you, or even worse, you have to manipulate a physical object.
Yeah.
You're looking up at the screen while you're trying to move something with your hands that's in front of you. And it doesn't work right.
And it just doesn't work that great. Like I was watching that demo, and a couple of times the game was asking the player to draw a Z shape with the remote, and she had to do it. I mean, how fucking difficult is that for the game director? She did it like three or four times before it would pick it up.
I honestly think the really interesting one of the more interesting things that came out of the Sony stuff is the PlayStation Plus announcement that it seems like they're going to bring a lot more high value first party games to PlayStation Plus, like Infamous 2 and stuff like that. Like if you look at that as a value add versus and having free Netflix on that platform and free Hulu and whatever else they end up bringing to it over the next year versus Microsoft paying $60 a year for Live and in order to get Netflix and HBO Go you have to pay for that,
right?
I think having free games is much more attractive to, like, I think that shows a shift. I think Sony's going to go after core gamers more, the kind of people who are playing Metal Gear and Heavy Rain.
And I got to tell you, in the long term, I mean, Microsoft makes too much money off it right now for them to consider it. But I think that the gold thing has to go away, especially
the value proposition has to become better. Well, something has to change.
I mean, it's okay for gold to be that's what you need if you want to play online. But to just watch video and use those services that I'm already paying $8 a month for Netflix and $8 a month for Hulu Plus and I'm playing for Amazon Prime Video, and I've got to pay an extra $50 just to get access to those on the box that I want. Come on.
Well,
I'm
not going to make that free.
I mean,
they're not, but it's annoying.
It is annoying.
As much as I said to somebody,
if
I would say to you, oh, get an Xbox, that's the one box you need in the living room. I've then got to say, oh, but you have to pay $50 a year for the service if you want to do anything.
$60 a year for the
service. Anything interesting.
Yeah.
The thing to remember is if it depends on how they're approaching that market. If they want to capture my mom and dad who don't give a shit about games but do love their Roku because they can watch YouTube and they can watch – well, they can't watch YouTube on the Roku, but they can watch – you know, HBO and
well, again, depends on your.
Well, they have a provider that lets them watch HBO, so they can watch HBO and Netflix and stuff like that on the Roku. They are not going to be interested in paying $60 a month, even if the Xbox is a year, even if the Xbox is $99. They don't give a shit. There's no value there for them. Mm-hmm. So they,
regardless
Microsoft
of experience,
has to address that. Yeah,
what's the thinking like at the Comcast level of they'll allow HBO Go on my Xbox but not on my Roku box? The difference?
Well, I'm sure HBO charges more for living room access to HBO Go than they like. I'm sure they're separate pricing schemes. So HBO says, okay, if you want to get HBO Go only on mobile devices, that's X much from Comcast extra per user or whatever, per seat or site or whatever.
It's pretty amazing that HBO Go is not a extra charge.
I think it's amazing.
Like that worked out somehow between, you know, someone paid someone else.
Norm.
Because, I mean, you're right, we shouldn't talk about it, but Norm is right in that, aside, interface issues aside, it is a phenomenal service.
We don't need to get into that. Everybody likes it, except for the fact that the app kind of is shit. On Xbox. The reason it's not on Roku, I think, is because when Microsoft rolled out HBO Go and everybody got it, Comcast customers, the volume of complaints and vitriol going toward Microsoft was such that they said, hey, Comcast and HBO, what do we have to pay you to make this happen
right.
just for us?
And you know right. what? That's what your live fee
That's where your 60 bucks
Yeah, and
goes.
I feel like I feel like HBO was looking at Microsoft as like a real premium partner because they cut special promos for how HBO Go is now on Xbox 360. Yep. Like they made a big deal
so
out of
you
it.
Are paying... You are paying more for HBO Go. You're just paying it to Microsoft instead of to HBO. And then Microsoft pays HBO.
Yeah.
Or Microsoft pays Comcast, who pays HBO. I don't know.
Does Apple pay HBO?
There's no HBO Go on Apple TV.
But there's an iOS.
Well, yeah, but HBO Go developed their own app for iOS.
Yeah, so...
So they were improving their relationship with their customers. Somehow Apple managed to make it marketing.
I mean,
and Microsoft had to pay them to get it to turn
the big,
on.
The big step that
or
I think
Comcast, I don't
the big
know.
Step for the All Apple TV hockey puck device next is going to be like the Xbox style app market where I can go get whatever channels I want to get and not.
Or it is, the iOS.
As much as it's annoying because
really
I want to leave Apple TV on because you want to be able to just AirPlay at the drop of a hat, but it doesn't have Amazon Prime. It doesn't have HBO Go. It doesn't have Hulu. It doesn't have a lot of the services that I pay for and want to have access to.
Just to be clear, I don't want the Xbox app marketplace. I want the iOS app store where people can develop their own apps and just release them, and it's a fucking Wild West free-for-all out there. Because that's where we, as dudes who like to watch video from the internet and from other sources, are going to get the biggest bang for our buck.
Well, it's never
going
to be a Wild West free-for-all. You're still going to go through an approval process.
Yeah. Let's see.
You want to be able to get the giant bomb, the tested channel, right? Right. Develop that app, put it up there, have Apple approve it, and it's all good.
Let's talk about
something that we actually played and spent a lot of time with.
And you did have a little. We didn't have hands on, but you got to see the magic screen
video bit tomorrow.
Yeah, whatever it's called.
So Wii U. And also, just in case it's not on your list, I'm just putting out the unit. Forget it. Did any of you get to play with the John Carmack VR helmet?
Because
it was pretty great.
They're going to bring it on a roadshow. We didn't get an appointment for that.
I heard it was pretty impressive, though.
No one, this is the problem, is if you're not going to do total coverage and do all the briefings, then you don't get the appointments, and they never tell you what the appointments are for until you get there, so we didn't take a Bethesda appointment.
Okay, but did you hear about it?
I saw pictures of it and saw Felicia Day using it.
It sounded good. I have no trouble believing it. If John Carmack has put... this, you know, you just kind of feel like there's no way it's going to be shitty.
Well,
it's not a real product. It's just a fun project.
It's some cool shit that John Carmack does for fun.
I'm just saying that compared to like that Sony helmet that I thought was shitty, I think this is probably not that. I think it's probably
he took one of those Sony
what that wants
apart,
to be.
Find out how it ticks.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Nintendo because we saw Wii U and got to play games and saw the real controller. The new controller, they've added a second analog stick from last year.
Good.
The touchscreen seems much, much more responsive. I couldn't tell from the games that they had there if it was multi-touch or not. They're using a stylus as well, so I assume it's probably still resistive, but just a good resistive
Very
screen.
Best resistive.
Like, works with thumbs and everything. Yeah. It didn't feel abnormally large.
Can you see yourself getting
big.
One?
Yeah, probably. I'll get one because I'll play Mario.
Yeah.
But, I mean, is it going to be the same old story though, where it's like you buy it and it's worth it for the handful of like great first party games, but beyond that, yeah.
So,
I mean, for me also,
yeah.
We talked a lot about the second screen being a theme of E3 and Nintendo more than any other company.
This is baked right into the recipe.
Instead of saying,
not optional. I mean, it's the kit.
Exactly.
You get the second screen
the
right
second
there
screen
in the kit.
Is the controller? You're going to have it in your hands no matter what. The second screen is super light. And you're talking about wanting a light tablet because nothing is being rendered on that controller. It is literally a controller with a screen.
Well, these were also tethered, so we don't know that they had batteries.
They said wireless. Oh, I mean.
Well, the eventual one will be wireless. The ones we were handling, I do not believe.
Now,
they say it was tethered for security.
The battery life on that thing sounds pretty
3 to 4 hours is the word.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2.5 hour charge time, 3.5 hour play time. That ain't great.
That means that it's not going to replace your iPad. You might be sitting on the living room couch playing whatever new Angry Birds Nintendo edition. For 2 hours.
It's going to have to be a very long play and charge cable, basically.
And then you go switch over to the iPad when you go to bed.
I think so there's a couple of neat things. First off, the same stuff applies as last year. Any game that's one screen game, you can play on the tablet, on the controller, or on the screen. So like if Leo wants to watch The Bachelorette, or if you want to watch The Bachelorette and Leo wants to play New Super Mario Brothers Wii, she can do that on the tablet while you're playing, while you're watching The Bachelorette on the
main
TV.
That is pretty cool.
Which is pretty neat.
And it jumps from the TV to the controller.
Yeah. Now, Mike from Penny Arcade retweeted something. I guess it was Reddit or someone came up with this, but it was, this to me is the genius idea, is Dungeons and Dragons with the DM using the touchscreen device and everyone else playing with their controllers on the main screen.
So that is genius.
That's the whole point.
Something like that is where you see the potential of this setup.
This is the whole point of Wii U. The stuff with
the return of couch gaming is what they're pushing.
Four dudes, five people on a couch, four people with Motion Plus controllers.
Right.
And one with a Wii U controller or two Wii U controllers.
So I still don't... We're so fucking jaded. I get that they didn't show anything. Yeah, here's a new Mario game. Here's a new Luigi game. Here's a new whatever. Well, but why aren't we more... I mean, this is really... We always complain about, oh, everything's the same. And like, we looked at Sony. We looked at Microsoft. Everything looked kind of the same. And
I'm
Nintendo saying, here's something genuinely new. Asynchronous gaming in terms of the kind of design...
That's not genuinely new, but...
No, so not asynchronous. Asymmetrical.
Yeah.
Asymmetrical gaming where I'm not playing on the same playing field as you. I have a different experience, different controller. I see things you don't see. Yeah. That's really interesting. It's new, and like your mind just bubbles over it. There's all the potential.
Here's the problem with it: the demos they all showed, even the Super Mario,
even the good demos,
even with a full game, New Super Mario Brothers U, it all felt like tech demos. Still, it didn't feel like it reached the potential of this asymmetrical gaming. It wasn't Dungeons and Dragons.
Patrick
by a long
played
shot.
The thief thing, which he like Nintendo Spy Party was how he described, which sounded great. The little Pac-Man versus Luigi Mansion game.
The Luigi Mansion was the best thing we played.
Yeah,
that was like the Wii. Chase Me. Yeah, so Nintendo Land is their Wii Sports equivalent. We don't know if it's gonna be bundled. 12 mini games to demonstrate the potential of the new Wii U controller with some single player, some multiplayer games.
Right. Some of them will obviously be better than others, just as happened with Wii Sports.
But just like Wii Sports, these are mini games. And so it's not your Dungeons and Dragons. The Luigi's Mansion game where four people are hunting a ghost and the person playing the ghost has a Wii U controller, sees a different perspective.
But much like Wii Sports, which was a huge driver for the Wii in the early days, it was what introduced you to this new way
of
playing
games.
Very novel,
very fun. And it's going to be up to Nintendo to not make the same mistake they did with Wii and the Wii controller and have them all be minigame. Like every 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, 4 years down the line.
We're still getting Wii Party,
still getting
Wii Sports Resort.
The category that sells on Wii seems to be minigame collection, right? And the other problem with the Nintendo Land thing is specifically was that some of those games were real bad. Some of those minigames were real rough.
I mean, I think also,
Donkey Kong one is nothing different than you could get on iOS.
I mean, I think the other thing is that because it will now finally have some kind of parity with at least the current gen, is that, they said, Mass Effect 3 is coming. It's like, okay, that I can see there actually being a legitimate iteration of Mass Effect 3 on that with the Pro Controller. It'd be just the same as playing on any other system, whereas opposed to with the Wii, because it was so underpowered, you couldn't just bring games over. You had to do a special kind of, down-res version.
Kind of port.
Yeah, that was shitty.
Even the Arkham, even the Arkham City stuff and the Assassin's Creed demo they had playing, I don't think it looked as good as PS3 and 360.
I mean, I
would disagree.
There are also some signs I felt,
though.
Because
you played both of those games on PC.
Maybe that's it.
So you're thinking about something different. Yeah. Assassin's Creed and Arkham City do not look... I mean, they if you looked at them on the Xbox, you would think they looked like shit if you played them on the PC.
That's the other thing, though, is it kind of felt like when I looked at especially Arkham City, it looked like the same problem that a lot of third-party developers had on the Wii, which is where they handed them this totally new control paradigm. They're like, well,
and the DS,
our game wasn't really designed for that, but like we'll find a way to shoehorn some features
here's some
in.
Menus on the screen. But that's why there's also the more core game controller.
Yeah, so I got to play with that some. I played a little bit of Rayman Legends, which is the follow-up to Rayman Origins, which came out last year and was one of my favorite games of the year. And they had this weird kind of asymmetrical gameplay mode where one person used the Wii controller with the screen and was kind of a helper. So they would go and hit plants to make coins pop out.
New Super Mario Brothers U.
No, that
see,
as well.
That's the thing. It's the same idea. Mm. If all platformers, if the Wii controller, the new Wii U controller just becomes a helper and you're just tapping to create platforms or stun enemies.
It was much more fleshed out in Rayman.
That is uninteresting in the long run.
No, the difference between Mario Brothers and Rayman is on Rayman, you couldn't have completed the levels without help. on Super Mario Brothers.
I don't like that either.
You had to complete the levels. The other person was just extra.
I don't know if I like that either.
I think there's going to be a handful of games that really... There's going to be a handful of games out there that really nail this concept. It's like, oh, this is so much fun. I love this. I can't get this experience anywhere else. Beyond that, who knows?
It's always the case. I mean, if you look at the DS, it's the perfect example. It took literally a year before we first started seeing games that really used the two screens to good benefit and to actually make interesting gameplay experiences.
And you know what?
Then it was three before we saw things like The World Ends With
You. Do you think there's a chance that history could repeat itself? Obviously, so the Wii came out, right? It was super disruptive. Motion control, Nintendo and Sony both... followed with Kinect and Move, that if Wii U is a similar success as Wii was in the early days, that what the 2E3s now, you will see Microsoft with their second screen and
Microsoft's
Sony with their second screen.
They have their second screen. That's what smart glass is.
It will work with games. Yeah. Madden.
Right.
When you're playing Madden.
And Sony's going to do that with
the Vita
for sure.
You're going to have your tablet running, you know, iOS or iPad running smart glass, playing Madden on Xbox 360. You get your plays
on
your iPad.
Got your playbook. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
A few things I did like about the new Wii.
By the way, Dreamcast fucking had this nailed 10 years ago, 12 years ago with the VMU. They were ahead of the game on this.
That was real light.
But you could see the seeds of it though.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. The beginning was there.
Yeah.
And nobody used it.
Cause
Dreamcast had games for a year.
It was
a good year. The core controller, the core game controller, the traditional gamepad.
The pro, that just looks like the Xbox pad,
Very comfortable. I like the Nintendo D-pad a lot. I love the plus style D-pad, the one that they have the patent on.
So my fear, also the good games I saw there, for example, Scribblenauts Unlimited.
Yeah.
Look really fun.
Scribblenauts look great.
Look great. I could see that on iOS. There's no reason that game
There's absolutely
be
no
iPad.
Reason that couldn't be an iOS game.
Having two screens, just because I can type in the word on the controller and see and still have that the world on the big screen, there's no reason that couldn't be on iOS.
I think the big difference this generation from the previous one is that handheld games are moving a lot to iOS because an iPod Touch is a lot cheaper in the long term to buy a kid to play games on the go than a 3DS. And the people who are playing Wii Bowling and probably only bought Wii Sports and Wii Sports Resort and Wii Play for their Wii are probably playing Facebook games now. I think the market for both of those platforms has eroded in the last 6 years.
And what Nintendo needs to not do is just shoehorn, Facebook and Twitter and web browsing and IM onto the Wii U controller.
They have to get social. They have to get multiplayer stuff. What I was saying is they have to do it in a way that actually makes sense and is fun. Yeah. And without multiplayer matchmaking and that kind of stuff, friends list that actually is sensical, then they're not like... Their gamble is that they want to attract core gamers with the gamepad and with kind of next gen experiences to this platform, but they don't get that if they don't get multiplayer.
Take your lessons learned from DS. Right? Imagine drawing. What's that DS drawing game that's built in? PictoChat across different Wii U. In between a round.
Yeah.
And they have that right. Even whatever they called it, like the new version of it, the Mi Plaza, which is like their main kind of social hub. Again, you're going to see lots of pictures of penises and things. I don't know how they're going to be able to. Apparently, Nintendo said they're aggressively. Nintendo's in a really. They're in a uniquely difficult position in that they clearly want to add more social features because that's where people are going, and the other systems are great at that. But they also have to be much more careful of, like, they don't want the griefing and the sexual harassment and all the things that are synonymous with Xbox and PlayStation Online gaming. So they kind of have to walk a very fine line.
And also, I don't know that Japan still cares about kind of social multiplayer stuff at all.
Right.
So I guess that's it for news. Anything else we want to hit before we go? Do you want to talk about Ray Bradbury now? He died.
It was very sad.
Ray Bradbury? Yeah. Obviously he had a great innings, 91, and contributed a tremendous amount. I love fucking Ray Bradbury, some of the greatest science fiction ever written.
He wrote Fahrenheit 51, right?
451, yeah. And Martian Chronicles, and about a million other things that were all excellent.
See, it's funny, as a kid growing up, I didn't really read a whole lot of that stuff because it hadn't aged particularly well, and I kind of skipped ahead 40 years and I went back and read Heinlein and all some of that stuff later, Isaac Asimov and some of that. But Ray Bradbury, I never really.
I don't think a lot of people who read him knew even knew he was still alive.
Yeah, he kind of turned into a crank in his old age.
I mean, you put him in the era of Asimov, who's been gone for a while, and in terms of influence.
But they were publishing at the same time.
Yeah.
Heinlein and Asimov and Bradbury.
It's very sad.
Yes. Arthur C. Clarke.
I do want to go back to some of the E3 games that we didn't talk about outside of the big three publishers, the hardware makers.
We didn't talk about Ubisoft at all, because who were supposed to have won E3.
I don't think it was
mostly to do with that Watch Dogs demo that they showed.
That game looked really
amazing. Which looked terrific.
So when we talk about this E3 being...
Before we leave off, no Nintendo discussion can be complete without talking about LEGO City Undercover, which looked amazing.
One of those things I didn't see any of. Describe it.
GTA,
yeah,
in the Lego City,
huh?
Okay, and you're an undercover cop busting Lego criminals
because you know
prostitutes
cop,
and is it watch, an M-rated
when,
game?
When we're done, you can watch the trailer. Okay.
I'd love to play a Lego M-rated Lego.
You
game.
Know because the cop set is the most popular set in
right.
Lego.
It's about as M-rated as you can imagine a Lego game getting.
Wow.
But it looks like a lot of fun.
Does the cop smack the perp and their head spins
around?
There's a scene where he's got like a bad guy like dangling him over a roof saying, "Tell me what you know."
Wow, this is like their Saints Row.
Pretty much.
And then the guy, and he tells him and he pushes him off the edge?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can actually kill anyone in Lego.
Pieces just fall apart.
And it's got the ability.
Interesting.
It's got all that great stuff.
I wish that was up to the Nintendo booth and we didn't have time to look at it.
Well, you watch the trailer. It's pretty great.
Let's hope Ubi, the other game that everybody said when we didn't get to see because it was behind closed doors only, was really amazing looking, is the LucasArts Star Wars.
So, 13.
That's what I was about to say. It being a transition year, some of the games that were shown behind closed doors or trailers shown could be for the next generation. So Watch Dogs, I don't know if they said it will be for PS3 or 360, but it looks so good that they couldn't help it.
The footage of the Star Wars game that I saw did not look like it was targeting current generation hardware. That's a next gen game.
Brad said it did not look like a current generation game.
He said it ran on a beefy PC and it was under 30 FPS.
I mean, look, it just doesn't make any sense to release a game that big at the tail end of a generation when you could be one of the first out of the gate as a flagship game for the next gen next year.
Unless you Activision it and do a release it like Gun, where it was released on Xbox and Xbox 360 and PS2.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, I don't think they're going to do that. It looked pretty good.
And Call of Duty 3, right? I'm excited about both. I think that next year we're going to see new hardware. I think the PS3 might go away. I don't think the Xbox is going to go. The Xbox 360 will go away for a long time.
No, the Xbox 360 is going to have a PS2 style shelf life.
Assuming Microsoft wants it to, but
there's no reason why it cannot. Yeah, but I think next E3 at all the conferences, you will see the announcements of the new Sony and Microsoft hardware, and you know it'll come out. Maybe not that year, but sometime early.
So the actual games. Watch Dogs look great. The trailer.
Yep.
That's another most likely next gen title, I think.
Assassin's Creed.
Yep.
Will, you saw that?
Yeah.
Really
that,
good?
That I'm excited. So those games are weird because the thing that they do to make you feel like a badass is they set the combat up in such a way that you get really crazy like counters and blocks and all sorts of stuff like that, right?
It looked beautiful. It kind of made me wish that I'd gotten into the Assassin's Creed franchise like, at the beginning, but I never have. So I don't feel invested in the mythology or anything, but the latest game looks great.
So it looks really gorgeous, but because of the addition of guns, ubiquitous guns, because the Renaissance era game had some guns, but they were unusual.
That is a challenge now. How do you fight?
Yeah.
Muskets.
But the combat that I saw looked a bit like I'm fighting 12 British soldiers, but they're all kind of patiently waiting their turn to fight me.
That's the thing. It wasn't they were patiently waiting their turn to fight you. Is that they would wait until you grab the guy to block the shot to shoot.
Right.
So the timing on that stuff, in order for it to be believable, has to be really tight. And I kind of didn't see that in the demo. And it was a live demo, so it could have just been that the guy had done it 35 times that day.
It was realistic enough in the sense that if you miss the first time, then that's the assassin's going to be able to come in and kill you because it's like reloading a gun in that area is a big deal. Yeah.
But the timing of that if the guys get – I mean maybe – and this is something I hadn't really thought about, but maybe the idea is that you wait until you're sure you have the good shot before you shoot if you're the guy, if you're the red coat with the gun. But it looked really nice.
This makes me want to play the game where I'm the red coat with the gun and every shot counts.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think that's The Last of Us, honestly. I think talking to some of the Naughty Dog guys, because the one thing about E3 that's weird lately is that it seems like everybody you see at E3 is at Naughty Dog. It's either ex-future people or Naughty Dog people. That's the only people that are at E3. But talking to those guys, it seems like the idea of getting tension from a short, small combat situations with a handful of bullets and ammo scarcity is going to be like a System Shock kind of experience.
It's funny. It's
without the kind of weird design.
That's actually a rare example of a game that I would probably want to play on the harder difficulty, because I was looking at it and I saw the guy got shot, and it's like, really, like, if you really, really want to present this kind of world, a gunshot wound should really mean something. I don't want to just have you had to eat a chicken leg and it goes away.
I like chicken legs.
Me too, but like in that kind of game, I feel like that's one of those things where if you get shot, then that you're either dead or you're really in a lot of trouble.
Well, and also a world where headshots are hard. Like, you don't aim for the head, you aim for the body, and you just aim to wound and then finish off
and
later.
And they've done a great job with animation to make that.
The melee combat and everything look great. I do wonder, here's one other thing I want to say that I found a bit depressing, is there's a lot of war porn in games these days. I lost count on the number of fucking high-tech modern warfare games that I saw in these trailers.
Well, I mean, that's the game industry chasing the
I'm tired of this whole dude bro thing. And during the Last of Us demo, which presents very realistic seeming horrible melee combat where you're like basically beating some guy's head against the floor to kill him.
Yeah.
And the audience is going, woo! Like, it's just so sophomoric and just kind of juvenile. Yeah, like, really? That's what we're cheering?
During that kind of press conference, you have to remember that Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo and EA and Ubi are pulling in employees and super fans from PlayStation fan sites and Nintendo fan sites and Xbox fan sites to fill in that audience so that there's plenty of cheering. I
get it. It's just that they're choosing to cheer at the moments that are really kind of sad.
And when we talked to Naughty Dog, they said the exact same thing, where they had a longer demo. They wanted to show off the cool crafting stuff and a little bit more of the actual gameplay.
Yeah.
But what demos
you have
well
to show the greatest hits. Action. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same thing happened. I mean, Hitman has the same thing. I'm sure you might have been out of the games industry by the time Hitman rolled around, but like, I remember going to see Hitman and Hitman 3, and especially Blood Money, like going into one of those games knowing how to play was one thing, but the first Hitman, when they brought that around and you were looking at it, it was a really bad demo. Like, you play that and you're like, oh man, these guys are completely fucked, because this game is going to be really hard for people to learn how to play, because stealth games don't show well in the first 10 minutes, right? You can't spend 5 minutes looking at a stealth game and get what that is about. You can't spend 5 minutes with Civ Rev and get what that game's going to be about. And I think games like XCOM and Hitman and Splinter Cell kind of I want to play those games. I want to spend 3 hours with those games, not 5 minutes looking at a clip reel.
Yeah, they're tough games to demo.
And honestly, just E3 in general, unless you can sit down and play a game for a while, like Jeff and Judges and those guys that have actually time and are there for 4 days do. It's not, you don't get a good
even
idea.
Even when
the of
booth
the
is open,
is.
Even when the kiosk is open, I'm not going to go jump into Far Cry 2 or Far Cry 3 and play for a bit, because it's not how I want to play it, the game.
Yeah, I agree.
Other stuff that looked really good. I mean, Borderlands. I just want to play some Borderlands. I'm always down for more Borderlands.
XCOM.
XCOM. I cannot be.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, just
on the two XCOMs.
Yeah, they are.
Well, one is the shooter, one is the turn-based. The shooter got delayed. The turn-based one's coming out later this
probably
year.
Probably more excited about the turn-based ones, to be honest.
Well, it's for Axis.
Sid Meier's programming it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so like, I just think about what they did with Civ Rev and then Civ 5 to make like that kind of game, which I was never really good at until I started playing Civ Rev.
I mean, you talk about the StarCraft and Diablo effect, where you have these games that are come out 10 years after the last version, and you have the same memory of how that game looks, but how you remember it. XCOM has even more difficult challenge, but from all accounts, the animation, it's not just like bumping up colors and real animation. It's actually the XCOM world come to life.
Well, because XCOM was like two games. I mean, there's the turn-based tactical game, and then there was this big strategic game that was almost like a meta game on top of it. That was, I think, like, if you look at the PC games, if you look at the games I played early in the age of modern gaming, you know, I played a lot of the MicroProse and Broderbund stuff early, way, way early, XT and AT era. But when I got a 386, the games I played were Wolfenstein, X-Wing, and then XCOM. And I mean, I'm really excited to see what they do with that franchise.
I couldn't tell you what I would give for a new X-Wing.
Oh, well, I would.
Can you imagine?
I would kill every one of you right now. I would gun you all
I wouldn't
down.
Give it a second thought.
Yeah. A TIE fighter, though, really more than. I mean, X-Wing would be nice, but I'd take a TIE fighter.
And XCOM's also weird because people love it so much. Like Dan Stapleton loves XCOM, and he has loved the spiritual successors to XCOM.
Yeah.
So even way
so
back.
He's real desperate.
You had, like, you know, Incubation. A turn-based strategy,
you
sci-fi.
Look that up.
I played Incubation.
Okay.
Demo on PC Gamer Disc.
Okay.
Way back in 97. And what's the more recent one? I forget its name. Xenonauts. Like,
oh, right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
There are a lot of games that people who either work on XCOM or love XCOM have made. And so this for this game to come out and actually be XCOM, there are high, high expectations.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Excited about the new SimCity, too.
Yeah, I'm always down for SimCity. We didn't get to see that, unfortunately.
Although there was some story going around this week that's very distressing, that apparently you can't just build up your city and then just rain disasters on it like you could in the old games.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of weird stuff going around with that. I know Stapleton was on Twitter talking about things that were and were not possible. Yeah,
but it looks terrific, though. That's one of the reasons why I want to get a new machine.
It's not going to run well, dude. I loaded up SimCity 4 on my hexa-core machine in there. It's still fucking 15 frames a second.
You don't think this new one might be better optimized?
No, because the thing is, no matter what they do with that, it's like rendering 3D movies. No matter how much faster the computers get, they're always going to spend 3 hours a frame rendering. No matter how much processor power and stuff you have on your PC, they can always figure out more threads and more shit to simulate and more. They'll just
slider bars go on forever.
Yeah,
when the end of the slider bar is infinity.
Yeah.
that makes a PC capable system. You know,
I still want to play it. I love it. Oh my God, the amount of hours I used to put into SimCity. And I was never very good at it. I could never make those sprawling mega cities that like some people did. But
have you ever gone?
So much fun.
Have you watched that video with the optimized SimCity? There's a name for the guy that created the mega perfect city.
Yeah.
Insane.
He got the highest density that like he went through and tried thousands and thousands of different things and figured out how to make the most density.
I mean, it was Coruscant, basically, is what he had created. Yeah,
exactly. Pretty much.
Yeah. Going back to 1313.
I feel like we're forgetting some stuff. New Super Mario Brothers, you looked awesome. I mean, it looks like it's New Super Mario Brothers, just more.
We didn't stop by Activision at all.
Activision had two things. Skylanders and Call of Duty.
I used to wonder why Activision, as one of the biggest publishers out there, isn't up there with Ubisoft and EA and Sony and Microsoft doing these big presentations. And it's because they only have two fucking games.
Well, but all the Blizzard stuff.
Blizzard is
a whole separate thing. Yeah. And Blizzard doesn't really show stuff in that way.
That's true.
So Activision is now so contracted around Call of Duty, which I think in the end is going to end up going the way of Guitar Hero, because they're just going to throttle it to death. And eventually even the hardcore modern warfare
players
are
going to say,
enough
so far.
Let's see.
So far.
We will see.
The first year that the next one sells fewer copies than the previous one? Yes, you're right.
And Skylanders. And then what? Like a bunch of shitty movie lines.
They have Spider-Man and Tony Hawk and all the other brands that they've killed over the years.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so
Spider-Man looks okay.
Those Spider-Man games always look okay, and then they're terrible.
You're always bumping into the walls.
Right.
EA didn't really stop by EA's booth.
The big story out of EA, which I personally could not care less about, is I guess they have the UFC license now. That was a big deal. If you like, sweaty men writhing around on the floor with each other, this is the game for you.
Is this a Fight Night, but with,
I like Fight Night.
Bigger punches?
With MMA, basically.
It's Fight Night with grappling.
Okay.
Yeah. I understand that this is not.
We're gonna catch so much shit. This
is not
podcast.
A trendy thing to say. I am not into UFC mixed martial arts. Doesn't appeal to me. If it does, then great.
I thought Warrior was a fun movie, but
oh boy, this is not the official stance of this.
What
is
you love MMA?
He's just worried about being on the wrong side of.
We've said so much shit that people are gonna be pissed off about today.
Fine to not be into UFC.
No. I'm not saying it's not fine to be into UFC. I'm just saying this is going to be a very controversial podcast. Any other games we want to talk about before we move on?
Did EA have anything else that they were showing?
I saw
new
something.
FIFA. What Most Wanted. Now there is a list. There's a game that's on my list. Yeah. Basically, anytime
Criterion makes a racing game,
Don't they just do Need for Speed Burnout crossover? Need for Speed Paradise.
Because they have to license cars. The car licenses won't allow them to destroy them like they do in Burnout. That's the reason there's no crossover.
Well, you can't completely destroy them, but I mean, in Hot Pursuit, you could beat them up pretty bad.
Not to the same
degree.
Do you not remember the demo that Criterion did of the car exploding into 50 million triangles before Burnout Paradise came out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thrilled that Criterion is still... the Need for Speed franchise is a powerful franchise.
It's a good fit for
them. Criterion is the best developer of driving racing games out there that there is.
Yeah.
And so it's a great combination. But
racing games. Hold on. Be careful. Because we don't
want
to say
hardcore simulation.
We're not talking about Forza. We're not talking about Gran Turismo.
Those things are good. If you just want to play arcade style driving, mm-hmm. Criterion are the best.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's great that they are now attached to that fantastic franchise. The price that we pay is for right now, they have to shelf Burnout, which is really what we want.
But here's if you look at it the other way, and if you look at it, the EA's history of closing studios that are making games that don't sell millions and millions of copies, had they not been on the Need for Speed games, we could have been, Criterion could have gone away.
No, absolutely. I mean, it was
bizarre.
Yeah.
You know, in the overall picture, it was the right move for all concerned.
Activision. Yeah. Or what was the company that did Mercenaries and Saboteur?
That was another EA. That was Pandemic.
Most Wanted looked great, though.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. So that's a sequel to
the first
Need for Speed game for the Xbox, right?
It was a Most Wanted, I believe, was a 360, was a launch title on 360.
It's the one where you had all the street races and you had to work your way up the ladder.
So what this looks like is basically Hot Pursuit, but with open world, which, I'm all over that.
Yeah, in.
Yeah.
100%.
Oh, yeah. Billboards. Capcom had stuff there, didn't really see Resident Evil. Square Enix, Lara Croft didn't really see.
What's the new Gears game?
We didn't see that
at all.
I didn't
see anything on that.
Not Gears 4. It's just like the new God of War. It's
like Gears 3.5 or whatever.
Finished a trilogy. It's like Halo Reach.
Mm.
I don't buy the whole three. Like, I don't know. That whole thing feels like the whole, nobody wants to call them fours because you don't have fours inside the same generation. That seems a little bit weird to me.
Halo 4.
Well, right. Because they're making three more of those. They've committed to three more on the 343 side.
Yeah. Studio Ghibli game.
Yeah, that looks interesting. Star Trek third person cover.
I didn't even know there was a Star Trek game coming out.
Kind of grim. It's in the J.J. Abrams universe.
Okay.
Colonial Marines, we didn't see any of that.
Oh, yeah. That's a game that's been in development for so long. I guess they kind of rewrote it to fit in the Aliens universe more.
Yeah, it's in Prometheus. Canon with Prometheus.
Yeah.
Is all we know.
Okay.
I don't know. I think that's it. I'm excited about Assassin's Creed. I'm excited about
Hitman.
I kind of want to play that. I didn't get to see Injustice. I kind of want to see what a Superman Dark Superman game looks like.
It's a sequel to whatchamacallit, to
Superman 64.
No, it's the sequel to
my favorite game ever.
MK versus DC.
I remember when Superman 64
is that a fighting game,
isn't it? I think it is.
I remember when Superman 64 came out, and I was working in PC at the time, wasn't paying a lot of attention to console games. But I remember everyone going, oh my God, this is the worst game ever. But I never played it.
It's real bad.
And it wasn't until I saw the Angry Video Game Nerd episode where he played it, where I was like, oh wow, it's so bad. Yeah, it's just impossibly, like, how did they even fucking release this thing? It's embarrassing.
I want to go ahead and tell you, you might want to fire up the Wii, because I think it's on Virtual Console.
No,
I'm pretty sure.
No way. I don't even want to play it.
It's memorable.
But it's shockingly bad.
Injustice is a fighting game. I totally.
Oh,
knew that.
Fuck, really?
Yeah, you know that. It's just MK. It's Mortal Kombat developers.
Boo.
What?
Really?
Well, Jeff loves it because it's.
I'm fighting. The fighting game renaissance is done for me.
Okay.
Superman's a big problem when it comes to fighting games, isn't it?
Superman's a big problem with games. Yeah, period. Yeah. Technology doesn't work.
David Jaffe doesn't believe that. We're on the Bombcast on Tuesday.
So tired.
Yeah, Norm is falling asleep over there.
Half asleep. So let's talk about.
Oh, we got to meet Max.
How about let's go transition.
Oh, hey, let's talk about what we have been testing. So we were on the Bombcast on Tuesday, and we got to meet Max.
You sat next to David Jaffe.
Yeah.
And I sat next to Max Temkin, who's one of the creators of Cards Against Humanity, which is why this is in what we've been testing.
Oh, yeah, we got to play it.
With Leo,
finally,
four of us, Cards Against Humanity.
You started off skeptical, Gary.
And I'll be honest, by the end of it, I wasn't completely won over, but I had fun, and I feel like the more you play it, it comes down to the quality of the people that you're playing with,
yeah,
and the cards that get drawn in that game.
Yes.
And you know, you could have a dull game, but you could have a fucking hilarious game as well.
The thing that, after talking to Max and a couple of the guys, we met a couple of the guys who worked on the game. The thing that became clear from them and from what they said about watching other people play and watching people test and all that is that it's really dependent on how involved. And this is what Norm said too. In fairness, when we were playing, is it depends on how involved you get into filling in the blanks on the card, like filling in the backstory of the horrible card that
selling
comes
up. The pairings
exactly
by creating a narrative, by telling a story.
Right, I understand the part where you kind of discuss the cards, yeah, and it can be
That's
a trigger for some interesting conversations.
Yeah.
I didn't love the whole business of feeling like to get the best out of each round, you really have to read each card four different ways. It's a lot of repetition involved. Don't you think?
Party rule, house rules.
I think that if that's the way you get people to start telling the story, then that's fine. if you're playing with people who don't need that exposition,
right,
then that's okay too.
I mean, what they don't want is people just picking up the black car and the white cars, looking at it and saying, okay, I'm gonna choose this one.
Yeah, this one wins.
Yeah, that's
what I get it.
I didn't realize, because it was Kickstarter backed and kind of community created, but it really is just eight dudes who from different parts of the country getting together after work hours and brainstorming crazy ideas to put on these cards. And they had a very serious process of what they want to put on both the white cards and the black cards, the prompt statements and the nouns.
Right. Like very specific rules for how the prompts work and like the structure of the prompts. So they make sure that they work with all the cards.
And also language. It's a linguistics challenge too, because the prompts are, I mean, the black cards are the genius. The white cards are kind of interesting. I mean, putting, you know,
but the white cards are just nouns for the most part.
Yeah, they're just nouns, and then anyone can kind of come up with, here's a dirty thing. And
do we need to explain what Cards Against Humanity is at this point?
Apples to apples, but
perverse apples to apples.
NC-17, and you know anyone can come up with you know rabies.
Poop.
Or
explosive diarrhea.
Yeah, exactly. On the white card, but having the prompts, you can work so they fit with all the white cards. That is a
to come up with
challenge.
As many as them that they have to do to fill out a big deck like that.
Yeah.
Having said that, even with all the great work they did, it is possible, and again, it really changed from round to round, but it is possible that you get a tee up card and everything in your hand really yields anything good.
Yeah. Well,
but every now and again, you'll get something that is terrific. And it's weird. I noticed this as well as you did, that oftentimes the next card you draw would have been great for what you just had.
Yeah.
Well, and then the other thing is that sometimes like you have four things in your hand and all of them would be fantastic, and you have to figure out which is the best story you can tell to make that possible.
Yeah.
I like the game a lot. I'd watched people play it a bunch, and I hadn't actually gotten to play really before, so it was fun to play the other day with you guys.
We still haven't played Metagame, have we?
No. Do you have a copy?
I can acquire a copy. Metagame's the same idea, apples to apples style.
Okay.
But it's about video games.
That's two people, right, with one kind of coach?
You can have multiple people. You just need one judge. It's all it is about conversation, because it's all opinion-based. So the prompt cards will be which game has the best story, or which game has the best graphics, or which game has the most intense community.
Okay, so the meat of that game is just really the argument afterwards.
And it's all about the argument. And for video games, where people love to argue about video games,
right?
The discussion comes naturally. And that kind of discussion is what Max wants to get Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah, this is what we should do with airtime, is we should use the airtime person as the judge in the metagame.
Yeah.
Impartial third person.
I don't want
What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. Yeah. The other thing, since we're doing testing, we did get to test out a couple of new Lego kits same day. So I would people are always asking me for Lego kit recommendations. I would very strongly recommend the Sop with Camel.
It was really good. It's kind of complex. It's hard.
The classic World War One fighter plane. Norm helped me finish it off. Great, great model. It looks fantastic. Fun to build. It's brand new. It just came out. It's a terrific model. I'd recommend it to anyone who wants to get into Lego. You built
the
slave one.
It's $100, right?
Yeah, it's on the higher end. The other one on the lower end is the new architecture model of Big Ben and the Houses of Parliament. It was also very, very good. Smaller model, but fun.
So the slave one I really like. It has a lot of good stuff going for it. It has a Han Solo frozen in carbonite.
It really embraces the modern Lego ethos of you build a good model, it looks good, but also you can play with it.
Now, two things I love about this is when you tilt it, Boba Fett and the wings actually kind of tilt with it, so he's always aligned correctly. There's like a little gyroscope type action going on.
As cool feat of engineering with the Kenner toy.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. I also love that there is actually a Han Solo minifig inside the carbonite that you can take
and
out.
You can slide that in.
There are a few things I don't like. One is that it comes with a transdotion. I assume that this is...
It's not a Gorn?
No, it's a Transdotion. Gorns.
Why would you complain about a free bonus minifig, basically?
Well, because it's a... You know, he's supposed to help you load Han Solo into the back of the Slave One, but he was never on Bespin.
Is that Bossk? Who is that?
It's Bossk,
okay.
Yeah. I love the Carbonite Han Solo.
It looks great.
I can't see that on the camera here, but he tucks it in the back. I don't like that it has the bullshit landmine thing, space mine from the prequels that pops out here.
Yeah.
That makes
Anytime
me a
I
sad.
Build a kit where they've added on some of the special edition prequel stuff, I just don't build those pieces.
That's a good move. I like that. I approve of that. But yeah, so the space mine, I'm just going to throw that away.
Yeah, I think that's the right thing to do.
And then it has a bunch of cool stuff. Like there's a, it has multi-fire. It has a semi-automatic like photon torpedo.
Oh yeah, that's I was actually quite impressed by that.
It was pretty. I think these are actually supposed to be concussion missiles, but whatever. It's quite a good kit. It's a great kit.
And Leah's just been building the vampire castle, which is part of LEGO's new Monster Fighters range, which is, you know, various, you know, there's a werewolf, there's a Frankenstein kit, various different LEGO iterations of like classic kind of monster movie things. They're fun as well.
I built the submarine, Japanese submarine.
Oh, and of course you built the Japanese Kusu sub. Yeah, that was beautiful.
It's
model.
Really nice.
Gorgeous. Yeah.
Really great.
It'll look great in the office. Temporary loan from the collection of Norman Chan.
You still have the satellite to go.
Right.
Yeah, I want to do something special with that. I'm gonna figure something out soon.
I think I'm done. I'm done buying Lego for the year. The camel was really the last big thing that I wanted.
Unless the B-wing comes.
The B-wing is that's obviously I'm holding that in reserve if it does come out.
The wild card.
I'm not interested in the Jabba the Hutt sets that are coming. They seem kind of lame.
No Lego Jabba.
Don't need it.
Hutt sex. Anything else we've been testing?
We have a bunch of technology that we've also been testing. Stuff that we're doing quick looks for. We're going on a lot of trips
next week. Yeah, we're traveling a lot in June. So this is worth mentioning. Traveled a lot in June. It's with the two of us, it's real hard to get a bunch of stuff up on the site on days that we're traveling. We did a bad job of this. We will try to do better in the future.
There's
but there
guaranteed
will be reduced,
new video every day.
Yeah, new videos and reduced posting on days that we're traveling. We're gone again next Monday, next Tuesday and Wednesday. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
And Thursday.
Oh, yeah, and Thursday now, too. Anything else? Oh, I got my 5N. I got my Sony camera.
Very cool.
I have been thoroughly enjoying that. It's okay. I got
the new one?
No, yeah. I didn't get the new one. I got one up from Norm. I got the one that came out last August.
Oh, so we all have the mirrorless now.
Yeah, we're all on board.
That's a good camera.
It is mine's a little bit bigger than Norm's. Mm-hmm. More or less the same sensor.
Exactly the same sensor.
A little bit faster image processing, I think.
Higher ISO.
I quite like it.
1080p.
I think it's pretty rad. And I've been taking a lot of pictures lately and I'm posting them to Instagram. And you took a really cool picture of me yesterday at the Aliens booth. Mm-hmm. That's it for what we've been testing.
No, I'm not done. I've been playing that Pandemic game, which is fun.
There's another Pandemic. There is a game called Pandemic that I played that basically it's the Flash game, right?
Yeah, there was one called Pandemic years ago and has been around for a while where basically you create a disease and you try to kill
it's
off
a disease
the human
RPG.
Population with it.
Yeah, this is more of a puzzle game, this new one, right?
It's the same, basically the same fucking thing. I was just browsing around the iPad App Store the other day and I noticed that it was the number one, it was on the top. I go to look to see what the top selling games are. And it was the number one game. It's 99 cents. So, I like these kind of games. I'll give it a try. And I've been kind of hooked on it. It's called Plague Inc. And, you know, you start a virus or whatever, and you can evolve it and create different symptoms and different ways in which the virus will transmit itself. And, you know, and the human population of the world will try to combat against it and immunize the population and close seaports and try to basically do all the things that you do when you contain a virus outbreak.
Is Madagascar and Iceland, they're the hard ones to get.
For some reason, Canada is the hard one to get in this game.
Oh, Canada.
But it's fun. And I've really, it's not perfect. It's a bit buggy as often these 99 cents games are. They're not as polished as you might always want them to be. But I've been playing it a lot. And it actually led me to, I've had the disc sitting around for a long time with the Steven Soderbergh movie Contagion that came out last year about, you know, a kind of global virus outbreak.
Oh, I really liked Contagion.
I really enjoyed it.
So when Gina and I were both really sick, like sick enough to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
I have to be pretty near dead to go to the doctor. But I woke up with a fever and just felt awful for 4 days in a row. Went to the doctor and they did all these tests. They did the flu test where they jammed the thing right up your nose and like scraped the inside of your sinuses.
Yeah.
That was awful.
Yeah.
And then they came back and they're like, we have no idea what you have. So just good luck. And then we watched Contagion that night. That was real dumb. But that movie's really good.
If you're in any way one of these people that is weird about germs or like, you know, hand sanitizing and stuff, I mean, this is the ultimate horror nightmare. Because one of the things they really
They do the CDC thing.
Well, they really show just how easily stuff is transmitted. Like you touch something, someone else comes along, I hand you a drink, I swipe your credit card. This stuff, it proliferates in a really scary way when it's a very, you know, robust virus.
The scene at the end where they reconstruct the path of the virus from the source vector to Gwyneth Paltrow is terrifying.
Yeah.
That was good.
And what was truly scary about it, what I thought was very interesting, is it looked at all aspects of it. That at one point, you know, there's a kind of a blogger character played in it by Jude Law who may or may not be spreading the truth or misinformation, who you don't really know about the virus and the cure. And of course, the true pandemic is actually the panic, right? The real danger is the looting and the riots and the society breakdown of there's only so many immunizations out there and people are freaking out, you know, looting pharmacies and stuff. And it becomes very kind of post-apocalyptic very quickly.
So after I tweeted about watching that, a couple of readers who work in different communicable disease fields, like virology and stuff like that, said it's actually very accurate. The movie is very accurate in the way things would spread and the R factors and all that stuff.
Oh yeah, I learned all about R naughts. That was really interesting.
The only thing that he said was untrue and about that movie is the length of time it would take to create a vaccine.
And that was the same case with Outbreak. Well, they just found the monkey and they had the vaccine immediately.
Yeah, he said on this the vaccine would likely, like, I think they said it was 18 months until there was vaccine, and then spread out over the course of a year or something to get it to everyone. He said in the real world it would take probably more like 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, but I think one of the things they addressed is that when they have a really, really serious outbreak like that, a lot of the safeguards and a lot of the protocols, they'll just bypass it because they got to get something quickly, right? Well, they don't have the luxury.
No, you got to be careful because you could kill everybody on the planet doing that.
Right. Well, because in the I don't want to spoil it, but in the movie they do some shortcuts to get to the vaccine and get it out there.
Yeah, but what he
and
said.
Even then they're saying like, well, we don't know 10 years from now, maybe everyone will have cancer. We don't know, but we needed to cure this thing now.
Yeah, the point he made was that there's no way that would happen, even in the worst case, without. In fewer than 3 or 4.
But I love any kind of movie like that where not just end of the world stuff, but like for me the scenes that were most interesting were like inside the CDC where you see like how they handle these super infectious agents and the crazy, crazy degrees of, you know, sanitation and, you know, the suits that have the air piped into them and stuff.
The positive pressure suits.
Yeah, really interesting.
If you like that stuff, my fantastic book about that that's kind of based on real life, but I you know, maybe a little dramatized, is called Crisis in the Hot Zone. It's about Ebola, which is a much less communicable disease than the flu or something like that. You have to have bodily fluid transfers. But it's about an Ebola outbreak in a monkey house in Reston, Virginia.
Mm.
And I don't want to spoil it, but basically you can drive by that place still. It's totally sealed up and like everything's been done to it except for being encased in a block of concrete.
Right.
Because the fear is that it's about aerosolized Ebola, which would be pretty bad.
Yeah, it's the plot of Outbreak. It was actually the most interesting part of the Tom Clancy book Rainbow Six, where like the crazy motherfuckers in that book, what they're trying to wipe out humanity using the kind of variant of like an Ebola type virus. And what's scary there is obviously it's not just something that happens naturally in nature. Like they design this thing to be as deadly as possible. And
viral.
And I thought if you remember, they actually had a really smart plan to
sprinklers.
Yeah, the sprinklers, the misters at the Olympics. Like, so basically everyone from around the world is there. So they all get infected and then they all go home to their home country. So it basically breaks it everywhere at once.
Yeah.
Scary stuff.
Yeah.
That's the true, I mean, we worry about nuclear bombs and stuff, but that's the true horror is like this is smallpox and things like that coming back.
There's more than enough horrors to go around.
Anyway, it's an area I want to. It makes me almost want to read a book about. I'm fascinated by, like you said, kind of epidemiology. What's the deal with the suit? So in Contagion, they had these suits where there's actually kind of airflow through the suits. What's the deal with that?
Okay, so the way it works is there's different levels of protection against what communicable diseases. The lowest level is stuff that is not communicable to humans, right? So things like diseases that only occur in animals or whatever, right? Or
right.
That require direct specific kinds of contact.
Right.
So those places you wear like goggles and the mask and gloves and you follow specific procedures. You go up a notch to things that are communicable to people, and then you start wearing the over the hood respirators and things like that. You go up a couple more levels, and it's things that are basically instantly deadly that they don't know how they're transferred, or that they're transferred, you know, through air contact with the eyeballs, any kind of mucous membrane, any kind of skin contact, things like that. So those big poofy suits, what they do is they keep the lab is at negative pressure compared to the rest of the world. So the air pressure inside the lab is slightly lower than the outside world, and there's airlocks coming in and out. So you know there's completely sealed environments. The air coming out is filtered and exposed to UV and fire and all sorts of stuff like that before it gets to the outside. So it kills anything that goes through the air filtration system. But if there's a breach, like if a window breaks, the air comes from the outside world into the lab, not from the lab into the outside world.
Oh, that's cool, yeah.
The suits, the big poofy suits, are the reverse of that. So inside the suits, it's higher pressure than the inside the lab. So you put that suit on, and if you get a tear in the suit, the air goes out of the suit,
not in from
the lab.
And there were, again, lots of little fascinating details. Like, you see how they did, like, the little puncture test first on the suits? They would fill the suits to, like, full. So they were, like, big balloon men to make sure there were no, little holes or anything in the suit that could be dangerous.
When they do things like you put the suit on, and then you tape the legs of the suit to the boots of the suit and all sorts of stuff
Like just
that.
Completely sealed
it's
in.
It's like space suits, but backwards, basically.
So, it's fascinating. I like those movies that, like, you know, the kind of the Hollywood versions are fun. But like so in Contagion, the worst case scenario is 1% of people in the world will die, which doesn't really sound that apocalyptic by Hollywood standards. But it's actually the more real world version
it's
of it.
600 million people.
Yeah, it's
60 million people.
60 million. And then by the end, they're saying like maybe one in 12 people will be infected. But in the movie it only had like a 25-30%. Like you could still get it, and only one in four people that got it would actually die. But again, the real danger is you actually end up with more people getting stampeded and killed in riots and panic and stuff like that than you do. Like fear is the, like at one point the character says to Judah, like that's the real virus, is this fear that you're spreading. I thought was really interesting.
I think that I can't remember, but I think that the model for the disease that was in Contagion was the 1916 swine flu outbreak. Like that was the mimic. That was the basically what they used for the model disease, the fake disease that they made.
Right.
But then you look at something like Ebola or some of the hemorrhagic fevers from Africa, and the mortality rate, if you're infected, is like 90% plus. And the interesting thing that happens there, and I say interesting and the grim sort of interesting, is that the diseases burn out. Like they kill people too fast to spread the disease widely.
Right.
So you get it, you're dead 5 days later. The scary thing about flu is you get it and you're contagious for 3 or 4 days before you start showing symptoms.
Right.
So in this case, Gwyneth Paltrow can wipe out at 1% of the world, in the case of Contagion. It's interesting stuff. The people who do that are real.
Well, and that was the other part of it that was really fascinating, was kind of like the forensic, figuring out where it came from and how it transmitted and who the index patient was. Like the investigative side of it was also really fascinating.
Well, and the local politics and all. I mean, there's a whole lot of terrifying stuff out of that whole.
That whole side of there's a whole bunch of basically investment bankers and hedge fund guys that are trying to figure out which stocks should we be investing in so we can make money out of this? Seriously.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing is that like the local governments don't want to be seen as the source of one of the diseases, and there's all sorts of it's a terrifyingly complex. Yeah.
But they obviously did a lot of research. I thought it was just the little details were fascinating. Like how there's only so much vaccine to give away, or they can't give it away all at once. So they did a lottery where like if you're bought, like basically one day, it was over the course of a year, and a random birthday every year, and people are kind of watching TV to see where their number would be up. And when you would get the vaccine kit, it had a little – it was like a little aspirator that went up your nose and both nostrils, you got the vaccine.
Yep.
And then it also came in the kit, a little wristband with a barcode that you would put on and you could walk around and you couldn't really go anywhere. Like at shopping malls, they had soldiers that would scan your barcode before you could be allowed back into a public area. Yeah. To prove that you had it.
One of a book that I've been reading lately that does a really good job of explaining like the impact of martial law and epidemiology on this is the Miranda Grant books. These were one of her second book in this series. It's a zombie book. Was one of the ones nominated for Hugo this year, and I thought, oh shit, a zombie book is nominated for Hugo, and then I read the books and they're fantastic. But it goes into the level of testing that you would like if there was a zombie outbreak where you could be infected and not immediately turn. And then spontaneously become a zombie later. The level of testing, the epidemiology stuff seems very
but
real.
Those best kind of books are the ones that are like they're thought experiments or
they're
simulations. Yeah. Like in the same way we love simulators, like these books.
Well, I mean,
do a very good job.
The more grounded it is, the more interesting it is to me. Like The Walking Dead and all that kind of stuff is great. Obviously, it's a bit out there. And in that case, there really wasn't any chance of a response. Or like the Will Smith I Am Legend movies, you see little bits of like how they tried to respond and blowing up the bridges and stuff and scanning people's eyes. But obviously, they ended up getting overwhelmed. But it is interesting. I mean, it's fascinating to me that somewhere, places like the CDC and WHO, these plans are sitting there for crazy scenarios like this.
Yeah,
like, they have to have something in place. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, not, if not zombies, something like it, like crazy, the 28 days later virus or whatever, where it just spreads so fast. Anyway, I thought it was a fascinating subject. I kind of want to learn more about
Contagion
it.
Contagion was really good. Read Crisis in the Hot Zone. I'd love to hear what you think about it.
Keep armed and carry on.
Exactly. Do you want to do we're running way late today, so I'm going to skip questions. We'll come back and do a bunch of questions next week. I'll save the ones that we're sending this week. Send me more questions. I appreciate you guys coming down as always. We have offices. I mean, we haven't moved in yet. But
when's that going to be?
Well, we've got to get Joey and I went and met the contractor who's going to do the studio stuff for us today. We got to get furniture and all that stuff and internet wired in there. So it'll be a few more weeks.
But is it like ready to move in, or is it just like a space?
No. There's carpet and the walls are painted and all that. We have to get the studio. We have to get the special needs stuff that we need, like the furniture and the studio stuff set up.
So this is in the city?
But yeah, it's in the city, undisclosed location for right now.
A secure location.
We're excited and we're in a cool neighborhood and looking forward to be back downtown and not recording out of the living room here.
Mm-hmm.
Cold Pacifica.
It is cold. Yeah, you never wear a jacket. I always tell you got to bring a jacket, man. You're gonna have a bad time. That'll do it for us this week. Norman, Gary, anything to plug?
Episode 2 of The Walking Dead will be out soon, hopefully.
Okay.
Very pleased to see that it got nominated for some Best of E3 awards this week. Cool.
And to get that, like, if you're in the Xbox version, it's a downloadable. It's a DLC. It's treated as a DLC.
It's all DLC.
Okay. And I think if you bought it on Steam, you already have it, right?
If you bought the PC version, you prepaid for the whole season, and you'll just get the episodes as they're released.
And I don't know how the PS3 one works.
And I'm working on episode 4 right now, which I'm very excited about.
Cool. Awesome. Well, can't wait to play that. Norm, anything?
I recorded an awesome podcast with Adam.
Oh yeah.
It's Monday.
It's the first episode of the as yet untitled Adam Savage project.
So be sure to watch that. It's on YouTube. It's on Tessa.com, and also we have more from his man cave.
Yeah. And so people know, we're going to dump those in the this is only a test RSS feed for the time being. We've got to do some tech stuff to get 2 RSS feeds going, but that'll happen in the not too distant future, and we'll have it on iTunes.
Why wouldn't you want more?
Yes, it's double the podcast. Double. I don't have anything to plug. That's it. We were on the Bombcast on day one E3, if you want to listen to that, the second half.
Were there any classic kind of train wreck moments or anything this year on the Bombcast?
That fucking house is just really – that's the house, train wreck.
David Jaffe.
The crack house, it's almost part of the Giant Bomb brand.
Yeah,
at this point.
I see a future where they have a big third of the GameSpot booth at E3, and it's just like decorated to look like a crack house. Mm. Like there's vials
pretty
and broken
much.
Glass and beer bottles and –
David Jaffe's saying that game development used to be unionized, so it's like making movies now where low level people.
You had your opportunity to call him out on this bullshit.
I was extremely tired, and also I was didn't want to interrupt. No one interrupts David Jaffe.
You're afraid of Jaffe, is what you're saying.
I'm terrified of him.
You can't be afraid of Jaffe. He's a great guy.
He had some interesting opinions about how game development should be done.
The thing about Jaffe is he's a dude who is really easy to miss. Like he is, as a person who is easy to quote
exactly
out of context.
I know exactly what he is saying. It just came out extremely weird because the example he gave was, and obviously me having zero game development experience, it could be absolutely the right thing. But he said, in Hollywood, when a director makes a movie, everyone knows their place. Everything's unionized. The director's not going to touch the lighting. Cinematographer's going to work on the camera. And if the second gaffer comes up to the director and says, hey, I think you should change the plot this way, that dude's going to get fired. He wants that to happen in game development, is basically what he said.
As somebody who is easy to be misquoted, the context was we were having a conversation about how indie games are more personal than mainstream games that 300 people work on. And the reason that happens is that Phil Fish and another dude worked on Fez for 5 years.
Singular vision.
Versus 600 people probably touched the last Assassin's Creed game.
I think that game developers should be able to organize, just like people in any other creative business are able to. But I don't think I'm not coming at it from where David is, where he wants to be able to just fire people.
Yeah. Right.
Because they dared to speak
because
to
they
him.
Annoyed him. Don't no eye contact, please.
Trust me, you. When a director fires someone on a movie set, they don't need union power to be able to do that. It's because they are the boss.
Right. Well, and there's the movie game parallel. We talked about this a little bit. The movie game parallel is a bad parallel because movies are shot in 3-6 months at the outside, and games take 2 or 3 years in a lot of cases when you're talking about.
Right, but like for example, as a movie writer or a TV writer, I cannot be exploited by the industry, because right. there is a union that protects me, and we have collective bargaining, and there is what we call the minimum basic agreement, which says that I cannot be paid less than a certain amount of money for a certain amount of work. I cannot be asked to do this, that, or the other, and these are the rights that I have, and every studio and every major production company has to agree to that basic level of treating me with respect. Why shouldn't people who work in the games industry have that same thing?
I agree, but
where jobs in the games industry are,
they'll just move offshore.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, they'll move everybody to Shanghai. And
well, why isn't Hollywood making all its movies in Shanghai then?
Well, George Lucas made a bunch of his movies in weird places because he's not a member of the DGA, right? Isn't that what?
Well, I mean, Lucas is kind of an outlier in any regard, but it's not like we suddenly stop using American labor in movies.
I think game developers should have more rights. And absolutely,
I mean, look at what just happened to 38 Studios. They may have had greater protection under some kind of union agreement.
Well, they had shitty businesses.
I mean, again, that is a terrible, terrible situation. But we see people in the movie business in the game business getting laid off left and right all the time.
Yeah. The other interesting
THQ just shut down a whole studio E3 week in the hope that E3
nobody would notice.
Of course, everybody did.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing that David Jaffe said was that he really doesn't like the way free-to-play model works right now.
Well, he cited some specific examples of things
I could totally agree with.
Yeah.
Where if you pay the $60, it's a lot of money up front, but then the money you spend is out of mind and you get to enjoy mechanics.
Yeah, it's like going to an all-inclusive resort.
I think it was either Evan or Josh August, one of those guys, tweeted something about how they're kind of tired of free-to-play being used as a pejorative. It's like, as soon as you say free-to-play, people just assume that's like a stepping stone to your extinction. Like, oh, the model's not working, we have to start giving the game away. That's not necessarily true. Team Fortress, World of Warcraft, lots of successful games have gone free-to-play, but it is still...
I would argue that Team Fortress went free to play after everyone
there was just no one left to sell it to. Yeah,
yeah,
I get
has
that.
Already
and,
bought it,
and that's maybe true of Warcraft as well. But like the news that, for example, that the Old Republic is going free to play very quickly, very hard to look at that as they're already kind of worrying about how many people are really paying to play this game.
The MMO situation, Pactor had some good things to say about MMOs and the cost of development. And I mean, the thought is that EA spent upwards of $200 million making and marketing the Old Republic, and has captured 1.3, 1.4 million subscribers with arguably the best IP in the world. I think that games, MMOs that have been in development for the last 5 or 6 to 7 years and we're expecting to hit the end and see $10 or $15 a month from each user are really boned.
I think
that's what happened to 38.
I think the difference is that if you design your game to be free to play and there's other ways to make money built into the game from the ground up, that's one thing. But when you launch a game under one system and then 6 months later you say, oh, now it's free to play, clearly that's a reaction to the fact that your current model isn't working.
Yeah.
I think that's how it gets thrown around as a bad thing.
Hey, I'm going to play the music, and then let's jump into fake outtakes. Thanks for coming by, guys. We'll be back next Thursday with another podcast. To be continued. Oh, hey, today's outro is by Agent Monroe, who helped us an awesome amount at PAX last year. So thanks, Agent Monroe. I'm playing music.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
That's it.
I grind incredibly fine and push. There's no dripping.
That's a good one.
That was pretty gross.
That is a very good one.
I thought that was good.
I like that a lot.
He did some editing there too. Sounded really nice in the whole 9 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the MMO market is in a grim place, and I think that everybody was building MMOs after WoW's success, thinking it was a market that was going to grow and grow, and a lot of those people probably are playing Farmville and shit like that now instead.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything that I'd be less likely to invest in than a new MMO venture.
Now, on the other hand, what I want to see...
Panda Express? New MMO. Where's your money going?
I know where it's going. Absolutely. The MMO is like the anti-Panda Express. Hey, what about a Panda Express MMO? What happens then?
What are you
guys talking about? No one hates Panda Express, but it's whenever you go to a food court,
yes,
it's Panda Express is the one place that has the fucking super long line. People go to Panda Express, and
I think that's
20 other places
service
that no one else is in line for. And the thing is, you must really want it, right? Because if you're hungry, you're at the food court. There's Great Steak and Potato Company. There's Sparrow. There's this. There's that. There's the other. And no one's standing in line for these things. They're all at Panda Express. They're all saying, I don't want any of this other food that I could get immediately. I want to wait 15 minutes for Panda Express.
But part of that is the line effect, because like you,
when you go to the mall, you want the shortest line.
No, if the three of us go out and just stand in line in front of a closed door downtown San Francisco, I guarantee you 20 people within a half hour walk up and say, "Hey, what are you guys in line for?"
Right, but not when the
Panda Express is obvious what you're in line for. Yeah, it's not like some super trendy secret nightclub that people are trying to get into.
I've got an idea. Let's set up a Panda Express sign outside a closed door and just stand there and be like, "Yeah, we're waiting for Panda Express."
Yeah,
see how many people get in line.
No one.
I don't like Panda Express. I haven't eaten at Panda Express since we moved out of Sausalito.
I don't dislike Panda Express.
Well, you eat. It is well established that you'll eat anything.
Well, I can't really eat there anymore, but I do every now and again. It's not great Chinese food, but. You know.
I would even argue that it's not really even Chinese food.
Agree.
Hey, I realized
they must be doing something right.
I spent some time thinking about it.
They put the orange and the chicken together.
Oh, yeah.
I spent some time thinking about it, and I realized why I'll eat at Denny's, and I think Chili's is garbage.
Go on, then.
I broke it down. The difference is when the food truck brings supplies to Denny's, what they bring are eggs and bacon and pieces of bread and like oatmeal that needs to have water added to it. They bring components of food.
Okay.
When the truck rolls up to Chili's, what it brings is a box of frozen Southwest egg rolls. It brings a bag of Southwestern salad.
How do you know this?
Because I've watched the fucking truck roll up to Chili's. And I know that there's not – they can't train people to put all the shit that's into Southwest egg rolls together. That shit comes fried. Chili's is selling food that is
– I disagree because the food at Chili's is not brilliant. But nor is it something that just came out of a fucking microwave. Like, it actually looks like food that has been prepared.
It goes from the freezer into the fryer. It's like farm to table,
but like,
you know, different.
A plate of food.
Yeah. They take the components and then they assemble it onto a plate of food. Denny's, God rest them, they take an egg and crack it on the skillet.
I'm sure we've got people in the audience that either work or have worked at a Chili's or an Applebee's or a TGI's.
Or Denny's.
If you have firsthand knowledge of what goes on in those kitchens, let us know. I'd like to know.
Yep, the more we know. And you can see Denny's. You can see them cooking at Denny's. It's just a big-ass skillet. It's a you know, hot top.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I'm fascinated by is kind of the time and motion of restaurant kitchens. You know, logistics and stuff is, again, I'm not good at it, but I'm fascinated by it. But, you know, especially like short order cooks, they've got such a system going. It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, they know exactly what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how they do it. It's like, how do they know to have this much
prepared? How do you keep that kind of stuff, that much stuff going?
Are they just constantly rolling food in the assumption that it's going to keep getting ordered? They're not making food to order.
They make food to order, but they'll have 17 orders going at once. It's a real skill.
But like, for example, if you work in a breakfast place, you're presumably just always making eggs, right? Because you know people are going to keep ordering them.
Eggs don't hold. Like, you can't keep eggs warm.
That's true. And it only takes a second to make an egg, so it's not a big deal.
It takes 3 minutes to make an egg. Yeah.
Breakfast food's pretty easy.
Yeah. So the things that'll keep going all the time are like hash browns. I'm sure there's hash browns.
You see that. Oftentimes when they've got those open kitchens, you can peek over and just see a massive pile of hash browns like in the corner of the grill.
The end of the world over there.
Yeah.
We had some really good sushi. Norm had Pinkberry twice in one day while we were in LA.
Oh, and I kind of jealous of that. I also hate it because Norm just gets the plain Pinkberry. It just seems like such a waste.
What's wrong with him?
The best.
Just go eat some Greek yogurt. Put some sugar in it. You're done.
Mm. Yeah, that's like going to a really good breakfast place and just ordering cereal.
Yeah, I just want some
just a bowl of cereal.
I get toppings on other frozen yogurt places to mask the crappy yogurt.
What toppings do you put on?
Blueberries, strawberries, and granola.
I like the granola topping, yeah.
Do you want to hear the greatest injustice that's ever faced America? Ever?
slavery?
Other than that, the crepe bits are no longer at Pinkberry.
What's that?
You can't get the little pieces of crepe anymore.
Oh.
Yeah, right. They've replaced them with waffle cone bits, which is some garbage.
Well,
right
hold
there.
On. That's not bad either, but I used to love the crushed up crepe bits.
The crushed up pieces of crepe. That's something you can't get anymore.
But
else.
That doesn't bother me anymore because I just get – and it also annoys me the way they have the seasonal flavors because like just as I was getting into coconut, summer started to go away. Oh, we don't have coconut anymore. We have this now.
Watermelon.
But the PB&J Pinkberry to me is just the shit. That's so good with the little toasty pieces on top.
Yeah.
Oh, and we went to – so it was free donut day. It was National Donut Day this week.
Oh, why would you go to get free donuts on National Donut Day? That's the worst idea ever. Pay the $2.
As Jimmy Fallon would say, hopefully this will really help get the word out about donuts. But it wasn't actually that bad because they didn't advertise it. You don't put up signs saying free donuts inside because obviously that's how you get the contagion situation. But it is known that it is free donut day. And
it is known.
It is known, Khaleesi. Sometimes when we go by the Dunkin' Donuts, when that light is on that says, you know, we're making them
you
right
mean the
now.
Krispy Kreme.
Sorry, Krispy Kreme. When you go by the hot fresh donuts.
Hot and fresh.
And our Krispy Kreme is great. You get to see the donuts coming right off the donut machine. Yeah. And because it's summer, they have a key lime donut.
Gross.
And a Mrs. Fields right now has a key lime cookie, both of which were fantastic.
I assume the key lime cookie is like a little tart, whereas the key lime donut is a filled donut with
actually
key lime
yes, but
jelly
then but
inside.
It has graham cracker crumbles on top.
I'm out. I don't want anything to do with that.
That doesn't interest you?
No. I like custard. I don't like whipped cream inside donuts. I want yellow custard with eggs in it.
The area down here, you know the one I'm talking about that has the Krispy Kreme and the In-N-Out right Daily next City. To one another. That is like a goddamn Shangri-La.
I want to go ahead and tell you that In-N-Out though, I don't like that In-N-Out.
Really? Aren't they all basically the same?
Well, they are usually, but the fries are no good at that one for
what?
One.
I've never known. That's the same.
The fries are undercooked.
When Will says fries, it's euphemism. Will's totally being racist.
What the fuck are you even talking about?
It's Shangri-La. It's a great combination. While you're waiting for your In-N-Out order, go get a donut.
Yeah, walk right across the street, and it's the perfect dessert.
Perfect.
Do you think if you went to In-N-Out first and got a donut and cut it in half and took it in and told them to make your In-N-Out burger on the donut, they'd do it?
No.
I want this donut as a bun.
No, I don't think they would do it, but there's nothing to stop you.
All the ham.
But there's nothing to stop
all
you doing.
All the ham.
I guess you could do that.
Hey, you want to go get In-N-Out and Krispy Kreme after
no,
this podcast?
No, God, no.
This is like a weird...
We started
with
food?
Making me not hungry.
Yeah,
we ended with food.
Sick and hungry all at the same time.
Oh.
Let's see, we had...
Why can't we talk about bait car?
Oh, okay, we can talk about... Fuck it, let's talk about bait. I didn't want to talk about bait
oh,
car.
Oh, by the way, what is this? It does look like a swear jar. What is that?
Is that for cray-cray? When I say the things
jar.
That I can't say, that's where I put my dollars.
Wait, and is that just cray-cray or is there a whole list of
just,
things?
Just the one word.
How much do you have to put in each time?
$1.
Oh, that's not that much.
There's no slot at the top.
No, I have to open the jar. It's to remind
oh,
me.
Oh, God.
It's like, to remind
it's
me.
The like photo of Fat Will on the fridge.
What?
Did we? Was this in the fuel band quick look?
Yeah.
Yeah, when I need motivation to remind me not to get fat, all I have to do is put a picture of me 2 years ago in the freezer. 3 years
ago,
I
guess
now.
I guess I could do that.
Yeah.
I've got some pictures of me. Leah had a picture of me that she didn't want to show me when I was fat, but she showed it to me recently.
Oh.
And it's one of those pictures where you look at it and you go, oh, my God.
Yeah, what did I do?
Yeah.
How did I let this happen?
Yeah.
Bait car.
I saw two episodes last night. What a great show. Should we just summarize it real quick?
So here's the idea of bait car.
But it has technology, so we can talk about this.
We're also in fake outtakes, so we can talk about
whatever we want. Here's the thing about bait car. Basically, they found a way to make cops without the domestic violence.
But it still has some violence in it occasionally.
But without the domestic
violence.
There's
the chasing. Yes. That's the most important part, the chasing.
So True TV, what used to be Court TV, has a bunch of these cop style reality shows. And in bait car... There is a program that many police forces have now where they basically rig a car with all this technology, which I'll get to in a second. They leave it on the street.
Usually with the keys in it and the door open.
With the keys in it or the door open or the window open. And they'll put it in a high crime area.
Yeah.
And it's usually a nice car, like a pretty decent car.
Yeah.
And, you know, within, without fail, very quickly, people will start snooping around.
According to us, from what we see.
Right. And they're not going to wonder, but they also show the ones where, they also show the ones where, like, Good Samaritans will come and, like, park the car or try and find the owner or be nice. But most of the time, the car's going to get stolen.
Yeah.
And the one I saw last night, they had a PlayStation and all kinds of shit in the back trying to get people to go for
it.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. How is that an entrapment?
It's not entrapment, but for the same reason that drug busts aren't entrapment.
Because the guy's not saying to you, "Hey, do you want to? Hey, do you want this car?"
Yeah.
Like they're just leaving it there.
Yeah, like the option could be to park the car, take the keys to the police station, and say, "Hey, this car," and that's usually the bad defense.
Is that okay?
Yeah,
in the states in which they're doing it legally, they obviously are doing it legally.
It seems like they have to get intent to steal a lot of times because they let them drive far enough.
They have to wait until they've driven it far enough away.
Right, because it's not illegal for me to, if I see keys in the car, to take the keys out and lock the doors of the car and close it.
Or if it's left somewhere that is inconvenient, to just park it somewhere else where it's out of the way, which some people have done, and they wait to see if they're going to go that far before they'll
Samaritan law.
But this is the fun part. So they'll wait for then the car is heavily rigged.
Yeah,
with
so the
technology.
Car, basically what happens
it's
is
it's got
when
cameras
they,
all over the car inside and out.
And when the cop presses a button, as a general rule, the doors lock. You can't get out. It's like child locks all around, and they kill the ignition.
Well, no, so the door locks as soon as the car is armed. It's like a roach motel is how they describe it.
The roaches go in?
You can get in, but the door will not open. The door will not open again until someone opens it from the outside. But they're driving around. It's obviously got all kinds of GPS trackers on it. They know exactly where the car is, how fast it's going, where it is on the street. They're monitoring it all the time. They can't really lose it.
Yeah.
And then they press one button, and it shuts off the engine. The car is just completely immobilized. And then the cops will come and arrest the guy, and you know he'll go to jail.
Sometimes the technology fails.
And oftentimes the criminal will say, oh, but I was just, you know, trying to take it somewhere. But, you know, of course, they've got the guy on camera going, whoop-de-doo, I'm going to steal this car.
Right.
And you
know, hey, man, I just got a Jeep Cherokee.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's trash TV, but it is kind of fun to watch.
Well, here's the thing. You feel bad until they tell you what the people that they catch have done. And it's usually like people with like 40 felonies and ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, they're all career criminals. Yeah.
Not all. Some of them are just a lot of them are just real dumb.
I actually felt bad for some of the young. There was like some young teenage type kids that got in the car and they really freak out. I feel kind of bad for them. Yeah. I mean, they shouldn't have stolen the car.
The best ones, however, are when the guy gets in and he's like, do you think this is a bait car? And he's like, no, I don't think it's a bait car. And then they drive off anyway, and it turns out it's the bait car.
Turns out it was, yeah.
Or the guy that like wants to start his rap career.
It's like people want to like who actively look for Cash Cab, which unfortunately is no longer around. Like they're like,
You know what it is for me? It's because they don't do Catch a Predator anymore. This is now what I watch instead of that. And that had the same problem with the perverts that would show up at these houses, and Chris Hansen would come out and say, have you seen Dateline NBC Catch a Predator? And they go, yes. Like, really? Yeah. And this didn't seem in any way fishy to you?
Oh boy.
You should be able to arrest people for just criminal stupidity. That should be a crime.
Yeah, I mean the bad part about bait car is it is really going after the stupids. Like it is not like all other socioeconomic stuff aside, the only people that you're gonna catch with a door open with the keys in it and a guy that just runs off are people who are pretty dumb.
Yeah. But hey, we want them off the streets as much as the next guy, right? Yeah. I mean, they're all criminals.
Get the stupid boy.
So I enjoy it. I've been watching. There was a marathon on it the other night, and I got Jeff Green got hooked on it. It was
you're a bad person, Gary Whitta. You got me started on
it. It's not. Look, it's not good television.
It's not The Wire.
No, it's. But you know, I watch that stuff too. I enjoy The Wire and Game of Thrones and Mad Men and Breaking Bad.
America's Got Talent
and good shows. And on the other hand, I also enjoy America's Got Talent.
I like America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
Nick Cannon is awesome.
Yeah, he's a good host.
He's like my second favorite host after Seacrest.
Yeah, and they've had some really impressive acts this year. I've been surprised by the quality of some of the talent acts. Really, really great.
The dogs.
Oh my God, there's dogs doing backflips. I literally never seen that in my life. No, a dog that could do backflips. It was amazing.
The freak show act on last week's episode.
I don't like those.
Oh, the freak shows, you can't watch them, but they're like when Howie and Sharon can't look away and Howard Stern is standing up giving a standing ovation. It's great TV.
Yeah, I enjoy it. Actually, I have to catch up on this week's episode.
Did you see the in a world gone the 90s movie announcer guy?
Yes.
In a world gone wild.
He was okay. I didn't think he was brilliant.
I just thought it was good because he came on.
And you know, the novelty accent is kind of like, but it's like, yeah, I get that for like 2 minutes, but like there's no act here. No one's going to pay to see your stage show.
Well, the thing that's good about that show is that they blow through. They'll give you just as much as you need of all the boring stuff, both good and bad.
Right.
Like if there's an amazing clogging group, you'll see 30 seconds of clogging. You're like, oh yeah, that's some pretty fucking good clogging right there.
Yeah.
And you can move on.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to see it just in the moment, but they're not necessarily people that are going to win and actually have a career.
You didn't like that guy that lifted shit with his eyelids? That was terrible.
No, I hated it. I couldn't watch. didn't like that at all.
What about the giant harp? The guy who made the entire auditorium?
The Earth Harp. That guy was amazing. And in fact, you need to get him on Tested.
Yeah. Did you not
see the Earth Harp?
No, Norm doesn't watch
it. It was amazing.
The problem with those things is once you see it, once they get them locked in there, we can't get them because they're on contract.
But I mean, if that guy had come to you and said, look what I've made,
him on Tested today.
You would love it. So Norm, what he basically did was he had like all these amazing strings that, I mean, literally, he basically wired up the entire auditorium. Like the strings were going out over the audience and like were connected up to the balconies. And then he had like these massive kind of like welder's gloves.
Leather gloves, yeah.
Yeah, and he could kind of play these harps, play these strings.
It was amazing.
It looked absurd, but the sound was, it was unlike anything you'd ever heard. And it sounded fantastic.
It
this guy had created
a
whole new kind of music that was just fucking great to listen to. I loved it. Yeah, and there's no, you know, it's easy to mock up these stupid talent shows. But, like, there's no forum for these people outside of the internet to really get noticed.
Right. This is why.
It's finding the 1%. It's finding that, the tenth of a percent.
And that show, I would go see the Earth Hop guys show.
Yeah. I would, if I was in, like, the thing is, a lot of these are like Vegas shows. It's like, if you have the choice between going to the Blue Man Group and going to see the Earth Hop guy, Earth Hop guy.
I would see Earth Hop guy. I've never seen Blue Man Group, so I can't say, but I heard, you know.
I might go see Blue Man Group.
To be fair, again, it's easy to knock at these things. I've never heard of anyone that went to see Blue Man Group and came away and said, oh, that was crap. Like, they all enjoy it.
My point wasn't Blue Man Group is crap. My point is, this is all stuff like Blue Man Group that if Blue Man Group hadn't been discovered and found a way to get a stage show in Vegas, Blue Man Group would be a fucking bunch of weirdos.
But I'm saying, Earth Hop Man is a guy you can actually see, like, playing at the Luxor or the MGM or something, like actually having a show there.
Assuming the theater will let you screw the wires into their balcony.
Oh, yeah. They'll, I mean,
like that. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if they can accommodate Cirque du Soleil, I'm pretty sure they can accommodate a guy like that.
Yeah.
I don't think Cirque du Soleil shows up with just a bunch of shit in boxes that they unpack and then just take away. Like,
well, they bring a tent.
They pretty much have to very heavily retrofit
those
theaters.
It's a bunch of elephant shadows and shit like that.
I've never seen Cirque du Soleil.
Oh, really?
No, in any form.
You should go. You're a Beatles guy. You should see Love. Love's
I want to see Love. I hear the O show at Bellagio is good as well.
O is pretty good. I saw that a few years ago. And, what's the one, Mystere, the water one?
No, O is the water one.
O is the water one. Oh, yeah. O's amazing then. Yeah. Mystere is okay too, but O is amazing. And
I guess I should.
Love was fucking rad.
Probably see that at some point.
Yeah, so, I guess that'll do it for us this week. Next Thursday, we'll be back on Monday with another Adam, as yet untitled Adam Savage show. Adam, did we talk about him on this podcast? Should we talk about the thing
wait.
Okay, keep teasing.
It's good to see Adam, getting more involved now.
He's really into it. He's excited about, I mean, no matter how excited he is, he's still going to be incredibly busy all the time. But yeah, I mean, he's super stoked about the site and is loving. We're getting a lot of prop stuff and good things like that. I think he's actually jealous of us because tomorrow we're gonna go see something kind of rad, and we'll talk about that next week, I'm sure. But that'll do it for us this week. We'll see you all next Thursday with another episode of This Is Only Test. Bye.